business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Southpaw Regional Wrestling. Amazing. WWE posted 4 episodes to their YouTube channel of their own fictionalized take on what an old-school Southern wrestling promotion from the 1980s might look like, and I find myself wanting 40 more. Hell, I'd say just replace Raw with an hour of this every week. I'd be happy. This is genuinely the funniest stuff they've done in years. It reminds me of some of the stuff DX would do back in the Attitude Era, where they would just go out there and goof off, and it was legitimately funny. That's what this is. And I really hope they've got more than just these 4 episodes in the can. Basically what it is, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's found footage on a VHS cassette, they say from February of 1987. It's the only tape of this that's left in existence. And you've got Luke Gallows playing his Sex Ferguson character, which he's been doing for years, even before he came back to WWE. Only here they call him Tex Ferguson. He's got his Ribera Steakhouse jacket on. He's kind of made up to look like Hulk Hogan without all the muscles. He's got the bandana and all that kind of stuff. Carl Anderson plays Chad Too Bad, which is such a great name. John Cena. He's the lead play-by-play announcer. He's their version of Gordon Solie. He's Lance Catamaran. And Fandango is his sidekick there. He plays Chet Cheddarfield, his depressed sidekick who drinks heavily and hates his life. By the way, is there a more pretentious name than Chet? Reminds me of Chet Kopic every time I hear that name. Remember that? There's a blast from the past. Remember that guy? He used to have wrestlers. He has like a sports talk show, I think on the radio, but it was on TV for a while. It was like him just sitting at a desk and right across from him would be his guest. He used to have a bunch of wrestlers on. He had Vince McMahon on a couple of times. He was actually, you know what I didn't realize about Chet Kopic until like a few years ago? He was actually a ring announcer for one of the early WrestleManias. And I did not know that. So, Chet. Do you know, by the way, while I'm on the subject of Chet Kopic, because I may never talk about this guy ever again, Chet was not a fan of Rusev and Lana. I remember it was some kind of a news item on a wrestling site a few years ago. Now, why they were reporting on Chet Kopic, I have no idea. I honestly thought the guy was dead. But yeah, apparently he said, oh, I used to be a fan of Vince McMahon and how he had a lot of respect for Vince and had Vince on his show. And now he finds him disgusting for having Rusev and Lana on television pledging their allegiance to Vladimir Putin. It's like, dude, it's a work, dude. You know? I'd rather have Chet Lemon over Chet Kopic. But anyway, enough about that guy. All of these episodes were building to their big lethal leap year event, except we come to find out that there was no leap year in 1987. Nobody bothered to tell, I guess, the promotion. They spent weeks promoting a lethal leap year in a year where there was no leap year. But that's okay, because we got to see Tyler Breeze playing the role of an evil banker. Rusev, babyface Rusev, as Big Bartholomew, a farmer just trying to get his farmland back from the evil banker. These are simple storylines here. Rusev. Rusev is just the best. He is the best. This stuff is just a lot of fun. It's a nice throwback to old school wrestling. They're poking fun at it. Apparently these guys do this stuff all the time in the back, so they just decided to take this and film it and post it online. And I hope they do more. And I encourage everybody to go on their YouTube channel to watch all 4 episodes. Again, they're like 6-7 minutes each. They're not long episodes. So you put them all together, I mean, maybe it's 20 or 25 minutes. So hopefully they do more. This is episode 487, by the way, of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 19th, 2017. I am the Solid Monster. And before we get going here, I've got news. I've got news on 2 new audiobooks narrated by wrestlers. that you can grab for free using our Audible link, which of course, as you all know, is audibletrial.com/Solomonster. If it's not burned into your brain by now, I don't know what to tell you. But Ryback, who actually changed his name legally to Ryback Reeves, so Ryback is his legal name now, Ryback has a motivational book out called Wake Up, It's Feeding Time, A Professional Athlete's Advice on How to Succeed in the Game of Life. That's a long title. Talks about his own story, he shares life lessons with everybody. Yes, life lessons from Ryback. It's the one thing you didn't know you needed in your life, but you can get it for free using our Audible link. It's almost 6 hours of audio narrated by Ryback and Pat Buck. Apparently the audiobook just came out on Friday, so the audio is available right now. You can cash in as your one free audiobook using our link. But also, don't forget, you know, AJ Lee's got a new book coming out April 4th. You can pre-order it right now using our link as well. You've got to pick one or the other, though. I don't think you could do both. AJ also narrates her book. It's called Crazy Is My Superpower. So you can get it now. You can, you know, again, punch the link in. You got to sign up. You get a 30-day trial of the service. You can cash in on the AJ Lee book, even though it won't actually become available until, again, the beginning of next month. But when it is, you'll have however many hours of audio it is narrated by AJ herself. And you can listen to it at home. You can listen to it on the go. Some very interesting stories supposedly are in that book. You could hear it in her own words. And you don't have to pay a dime. So, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Again, you don't pay if you cancel for any reason during your 30-day trial. Hopefully everybody sticks with it, but if you don't want to, you don't get billed and you get to keep the book. We're not gonna take the book away from you. So definitely take advantage of either one of those two books. And if you would like to support this podcast via PayPal, as many of you, do each and every week, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. There's a PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. This is pretty much the only time each week that I mention it or I push it and then I do the shout outs, which is just a fun thing for people. You don't really see me on Facebook or Twitter. I'm not, you know, beating it like a dead horse or anything like that. It's up to people what they want to do. It's entirely up to you. Completely voluntary if you want to make a donation and show your support. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout out here on this show, which people seem to enjoy. And I want to say thank you very much to John Loose Cannon Lopez. I feel like if I didn't mention John's name, if he wasn't part of the roll call, I'd feel like something bad happened. I would call the police, have them do a welfare check. So thankfully he's doing well. Deadpool James Herrera, he's another one, big time supporter. Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Hot Stuff Hector Pena, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, The Reflection of Perfection Abraham Lara, Mentally Unstable Matt Cotter, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Mass Grave Micah Harshaw, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Canadian Destroyer Rob Morrow, Trevor Mountain Man Mays, The Bakersfield Brawler Kevin Velato, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Prince of Pleasantville Anelio Crockett, and Scott the Stump Woodford. Hopefully Scott's doing better. He's had some tough times recently, so thank you to everybody who has made a donation this week to the podcast. One more house cleaning note here before I get into what I know everybody wants to hear about. I don't necessarily want to talk about it, but can't ignore it. But we have 2 weeks left to go until our meetup in Orlando. We're only 2 weeks away. I'm getting excited. Are you? Everybody should be excited. I'm excited to get the hell out of here. This weather has been ridiculous. I need a warmer climate. And before Florida is wiped off the face of the earth and submerged by the ocean, I'd like to get down there and try to enjoy the weather. And so we're going to do that in 2 weeks. Tin Roof, Orlando is the place to be. WrestleMania Sunday, April 2nd, 11:15 a.m. Well, just figure 11 a.m. until 2:30 p.m. You can check out the Facebook invite. I think even if you're not on Facebook, you can still... I'll tweet a link out. You could still go to the page and see the invitation, see the address and all the information there. If you are on Facebook, I encourage you to RSVP. I think last time I checked, it was over 50 or 55 or something were confirmed. And there's another 20 or so who are interested. And that's not even everybody. because not everybody RSVP. So that's pretty healthy. And I hope to see all of you there. I'm looking forward to that. Okay. Let's talk about the Paige situation. Oh, Paige. Private photos, videos, stolen from her phone, or from the cloud, or wherever these things are stored now, and leaked on the internet. And the reaction was nothing short of embarrassing. And I'm not just talking about our Facebook group, although it was very embarrassing. But people went out of their minds. They lost their minds because this stuff leaked and it was there for the world to see. And it made for a very embarrassing situation. Now, these images and videos seemingly were shot years ago when she was still the NXT Women's Champion. So that probably goes back about, what, 3 or 4 years? She is on camera in sexually explicit positions, doing sexually explicit things, in some cases with other people, including Brad Maddox, my karaoke buddy, Brad Maddox. You know that photo I took with him at that bar? That was over WrestleMania 31 weekend out in California. That was after all of this stuff happened. I don't remember if we shook hands or not. I hope not. But Brad Maddox is one thing. You know, Brad Maddox was fired a while ago. Ironically, he was fired for using the phrase cocky pricks in front of the live crowd. There's a certain degree of irony to that. But he doesn't work for the company anymore. So in a way, it's like, all right, Brad Maddox, who cares? He doesn't work there anymore. The other person on film is Xavier Woods, one of the members of The New Day, who happened to be hosting WrestleMania this year. There is one video that shows Paige in an intergender handicap tag team match with both Brad Maddox and Xavier Woods. I don't know what her relationship status was at that time. She may have been single. Xavier Woods, I believe, may have been in a relationship. I know now he's married. He's got his first kid coming in May. He's got a kid on the way. Wife has a bun in the oven. So for him, this is just a terrible situation. Terrible timing. And like I said, he's also supposed to be hosting WrestleMania with the rest of New Day. Now, I don't think this changes any of that. And all of this talk about, well, maybe they'll hold him off Raw tomorrow night because Raw's in Brooklyn. It's like, yeah, and they're in Philadelphia the following week. What are they supposed to do? Just keep him off television until WrestleMania? I mean, that's ridiculous. What makes Brooklyn so much worse than Philadelphia? I take offense to that. I would just say, you know what? If you want to avoid a potentially embarrassing situation, just put him in another one of those New Day Talks segments backstage. Like the one they did on Raw last Monday, they could just cut the crowd noise out. The only problem with that is that segment sucked. That segment was absolutely horrendous, and I don't ever want to see another one of those again. But they may have no choice. So, I mean, keeping him off the show because it's Brooklyn is just stupid. That's a stupid thing to say. There's going to be chants. There's going to be signs this week, next week, and probably for many weeks to come. Just deal with it because it ain't going away. As far as all this other stuff is concerned, look, there's a lot of people who are passing judgment on Paige. What is Paige now? 23? 24? She was probably around 20 or 21 when this all went down. Fact is, young people have sex. That's what they do. I don't begrudge her for it. I hope she has lots and lots of sex. There's nothing wrong with it. And the fact that a bunch of people from WWE are fucking around shouldn't come as a shock to anyone. These people are like the traveling circus. They see each other more than they see their actual families or their spouses. What do you think goes on behind closed doors? And if you don't think this stuff happens more often, then you're being naive. Look at last year's Olympics. Last year's Olympics in Rio. There were tons of stories on all of the sex that happens in the Olympic Village. The Brazilian government handed out something like 450,000 condoms to all the athletes. And I think it said, like in the article, that breaks down to something like 40 condoms per person. That's a lot of sex. Imagine doing that and then running in the 50 meter dash the next day. If that were me, I wouldn't be able to move. I wouldn't have any feeling from my waist down. People have sex. That's not the issue here. The issue is a gross invasion of privacy. This was not of her own doing. These were stolen. These were intentionally leaked to harm her and defame her and embarrass her. And I know there's going to be people who say, well, how is this any different from Seth Rollins' dick pics? How is this any different from Tom Phillips' text messages? Which was also very embarrassing. Both of those things were very embarrassing to both of those people. But there are some differences. Those guys were engaged to be married, I believe, when that stuff happened. In one case, it was the fiancé who actually, you know, leaked it, I think. And that doesn't make it right, I'm just saying. But you run that risk. When you do stuff like that, you are taking a risk. And in the case of Tom Phillips, it was the other person who outed him. Not his girlfriend or his fiancé or whatever. And, you know, again, he was doing something that he should not have been doing. It's a risk. Still a privacy issue. I'm not saying it makes it right. I'm not condoning it. But the circumstances were different. And this also, you know, what sucks about this, as compared to any of those other situations, is that we're not just talking about one person here. Potentially, this harms multiple people. Okay, we're not talking about just one person here. This could have implications and consequences for more than one person. And here's the other thing, by the way, on the Tom Phillips stuff. You know, people have been asking, like, do I think Paige should be fired for what happened? The answer is no. It's not her fault. She's the victim in all this. She did nothing wrong here. Except, there is a photo going around of her with the old NXT Women's Championship belt. And suffice to say, the title is being tainted. I'll leave the rest up to your imagination. Really just disgusting, really inappropriate, because that's company property. That is a really stupid thing to do. To damage company property like that and to record it, to take a picture of it. That was really, really stupid. And I think if there's anything that she could be fired for, and maybe should be fired for, that's it right there. You can't be doing that. That's company property that gets passed around from person to person. Like an STD. People have kissed that thing. They put their mouth on it. So I think if she should be fired for anything, it's that. But that brings me back to Tom Phillips and the issue of company property. Now, I don't know that this was ever confirmed. I'm not saying it was. But there were rumors that he may have been reprimanded by the company for what happened. Obviously, they didn't take him off TV. They didn't fire him. They didn't suspend him. But that maybe they yelled at him or reprimanded him in some way. It probably was just an admonishment. I don't know that they docked him pay or anything like that. And I mean, hell, he was the lead announcer on SmackDown this week. So Tom Phillips seems to be doing okay. But he may have been sexting with that woman who was not his fiance using a company-issued phone. Or at least on occasion, he would use maybe a company-issued phone. Again, I don't know that that was ever confirmed. I don't even know if he has a company-issued phone. I don't know that for sure. But that's some of the stories that were going around. And it raises the issue of a double standard, which WWE has to be very, very careful with here. Because unlike all these other situations now, you're not dealing with a dude, you're dealing with a woman. And so WWE has to be very careful here that, you know, if they don't punish any of these other people, but they punish her, that's not going to wear very well. But the fact is, look, if I got caught exchanging sexually explicit messages using a company-issued iPhone, I'd be in a lot of trouble. I probably would be out of a job. So for her, that's the only real issue that I see. Again, it goes back to the belt and what was going on there. And yeah, I mean, they're probably within their right to do that, and it would be hard to argue against something like that, because there's no justification for that. That's just ridiculous. They could absolutely do it. She's already got two wellness strikes against her. She's been popping up backstage at all kinds of shows for other promotions. She was backstage at the TNA tapings with Del Rio. She's been spotted backstage at other wrestling shows, which is probably in violation of her contract. You're not allowed to do that if you're under WWE contract. It would be very easy for them to see something like that kind of image, and say, you know what, we're going to wash our hands of her. There's a lot of people who probably should be washing their hands right now. The last time someone under WWE contract had a sex tape leaked, they severed all ties with him, and that was Hulk Hogan. Also, footage was leaked without the person's consent, and then it was posted online. Similar circumstances. It wasn't right then, and it's not right now. And I was happy. And I said as much on the podcast. I was very happy. I was like, when Hulk Hogan filed that lawsuit against Gawker, I was like, I hope he goes all the way and he wins the whole thing. I was happy when he won that case against Gawker and he bankrupted their asses. Good. They got what they deserved. But he was also caught on that tape saying a lot of racist stuff, which, I mean, from a PR standpoint, if you're WWE and this guy is not even a wrestler, he's basically a spokesperson for your company. I mean, let's be honest here. That was the role that Hogan was in. He was a representative, a spokesman, essentially, for the company. He wasn't so much a performer anymore. I mean, he'd come out and pose, but, you know, you have somebody in that position, and it doesn't matter if the tape is a year old, 8 years old, 15 years old. You know, he said a lot of offensive stuff on that tape. It was wrong that it got leaked, but it got out. And so WWE did what they felt they had to do. I don't begrudge them for that. I think I would have made the same decision if I were working in their PR department and the decision came on me. The guy was toxic. You got to get rid of him. Get rid of him for a few years and eventually you bring him back. I mean, I said it was inevitable that Hogan was going to be back. Now, I don't know if any of this stuff changes, the whole Hogan thing, because I was expecting Hogan to be at WrestleMania. I know he came out this week and denied. He said, I'm not going to be at WrestleMania. I don't buy it. I mean, he'll be in Orlando. I don't buy that he's not going to be at WrestleMania. Maybe after this, he won't be. Maybe now they're going to get cold feet and they're going to hold his return off for a while. I don't know. But I fully expected him to be there. You know, he paid his penance. Enough time has gone by. And I'm perfectly fine with them, you know, bringing him back and doing stuff with Hulk Hogan. But they had to get rid of him. Now, in this case, I'm not aware of there being any racially offensive comments on these page videos. Some of you would know better than me. I don't even know how many videos are out there. There's at least three of them. So again, the fact that they leaked is no reason to punish her. The whole desecrating company property thing probably is, but I'm not even sure that it's worth it. It won't look good for them to punish her, but not punish all the other people. And unfortunately, this is the world we live in now, and I think it's time the WWE comes up with a definitive policy when it comes to this kind of stuff, in writing, that they could point to. So there's no ambiguity going forward about how to handle these situations. It's not always one size fits all. You know, you gotta evaluate each situation on its own merits and then decide what the right punishment is or isn't. But it's going to happen again. I guarantee you, 100%, this will happen again. And they need to be prepared for when it does. My guess, if you want to know what I think ends up happening, I don't think anything happens. I think everybody survives. And hopefully they catch the person who leaked this. And that person is punished accordingly and to the fullest extent of the law. Because whenever something like this happens, I just say, I imagine myself in their position. I don't have stuff like that floating around. Because to me, look, it's just my personal opinion. I think it's too much of a risk. I can't ever imagine doing stuff like that and keeping stuff on my phone or in the cloud or on the computer or anything like that. Okay? I'm sorry to let everybody down, but you're not going to find any Solomonster stuff out there like that. But again, I have friends and I know people who have girlfriends and wives, and when they're at work, they text each other, you know, images and stuff. I'm not saying that it's wrong. I can understand why they do it. I know a lot of that stuff goes on. But as long as you understand, now this really more applies to when you're a celebrity and you're in the public eye. You know, my friend isn't a celebrity and nobody gives a shit about what he and his wife do. But you know, the fact is, you know, Paige is in the public eye. She's got a million plus followers on Twitter. She's got a lot of very sick people who follow. You got to see some of these women, the people who follow them, the creepy people. It's scary. Some of them get stalked. I mean, when you're in the public eye, this is the kind of stuff that you have to deal with. And if you're going to put stuff like that out there, even if you think it's private, I think a good notion to go by, I think our FBI director just said this the other day. Comey just said this a few weeks ago, that basically there is no such thing as privacy. It's the illusion of privacy. Privacy really doesn't exist anymore. You may think it does, but it really doesn't. And so if you operate under that assumption, then maybe you might think twice before recording stuff like that, or if you're going to, maybe after 6 months or a year, might be a good idea to scrub that and get rid of it. Again, this stuff goes back a few years. Nothing good can come from that kind of stuff just sitting around, because there's always going to be people who are looking to do bad things. So I guess the lesson in all this is just be smarter about it. If you're in the public eye, you have to accept the fact that people get hacked, right? Emma Watson was another one, I think, this week. They said she got hacked, and a lot of celebrities have been hacked. If you're a celebrity, you've got to do what needs to be done to protect yourself. And like I said, hopefully the person who did this gets caught and they get punished. All right, so enough about that. Let's move on to actual wrestling stuff here. I want to talk about WrestleMania. We are a couple of weeks away now from WrestleMania 33. And I'm not doing predictions yet. I'm saving that for 489 when we're down in Orlando. We're going to be back in studio, myself, Noah Mark, Brian Blade, that Saturday. So we'll tackle all that stuff then. But I wanted to run through the WrestleMania card as it stands so far. It's the unofficial card. Some matches are official, most are not. Because there's been a lot made of how bad the card looks for this year. So I wanted to see, like, is it really all that bad? Is this card really as bad as people say it is? One thing I noticed right away, immediately, when I look at this card, is that there is a shitload of matches this year. Like, a lot of matches on this card. Main event, Goldberg and Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. We have Bray Wyatt defending the WWE title against Randy Orton. Roman Reigns against The Undertaker. AJ Styles battling Shane McMahon. It's now official as of this past week. Seth Rollins, I guess, is going to show up to confront Triple H. I guess that's how they're kind of billing it. Chris Jericho defends the United States Championship against Kevin Owens. Bayley defends her Raw Women's title against Charlotte and Sasha Banks. Although, they still have time to add Nia Jax and Dana Brooke, I guess, if they want. I hope not. God, I hope not, but they might. The SmackDown Women's title will also be on the line. The SmackDown Women's title match already has 5 women in it, so I don't know if they're going to do 5 women in the Raw match and 5 women in the SmackDown match. I don't know what their plans are, but the SmackDown match already has Alexa Bliss defending against Mickie James, Becky Lynch, Natalia, and Carmella. Although I expect maybe a surprise entry from Naomi, if she can make it back in time in her hometown, maybe Eva Marie might make her big return. John Cena and Nikki Bella against Miz and Maryse. Anderson and Gallows against Cesaro and Sheamus and Enzo and Big Cass for the Raw Tag Team titles. We have Neville defending the Cruiserweight title against Austin Aries. And this will be Aries' very first WrestleMania. After all the years he's been in the business, his very first WrestleMania. I am so happy. I'm happy for him, but I'm also really happy for Neville. Because if you remember, it was a year ago, almost to the day. It was a year ago, right around this time, a few weeks before WrestleMania. Neville was in a match on Raw against Chris Jericho. And he broke his ankle. He broke his ankle on a baseball slide. And he missed his very first WrestleMania. I remember he was so sad when they showed that video of him being taken to the back and the doctor wanted to cut his boot off. And he's like, no, don't cut the boot. I don't know if it was just because the boots were expensive and, you know, he had just gotten them. But it was so sad. He was like, no, please don't cut the boot. And they're like, oh, we have to. And they're feeling around and he's like, is it broken or is it fractured? And the doctor's just like, yeah. And Neville just, he collapses, he puts his hands over his face, he just wants to bawl his eyes out, his eyes well up. It was really sad. You really just watch that and you feel for the guy. The guy was crushed. And now here he is a year later, he's got the championship, he's the head face of that, the head kind of performer in that division. He's killing it with this heel turn, and he's going into his first WrestleMania with the chance to steal the show, because I said it last week, and I'll say it again. They give these guys enough time, and they go out there, I think, early enough in the show where the crowd is maybe more into it. These guys can go out there, they could tear the house down. There is probably no better singles cruiserweight match with the guys right now in that division that they could have than Neville against Austin Aries. This is the match that you want. I mean, the match that I wanted was Neville against Kota Ibushi. I know why it's not happening, but this is the next best thing. So I'm really happy for both these guys. And finally, we're not done yet. Finally, we have the fourth annual Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Poor Big Show. Big Show is in the Battle Royal. He trained so hard for Shaquille O'Neal, only for the whole thing to fall apart over money. There will be no match with Shaq, so he's back in the Battle Royal, which he's already won once before. No need for him to win it again. My money, without even knowing everybody who's in this thing, my money is on Braun Strowman. I can't believe he doesn't even have a match yet, so I assume he'll just be in the Battle Royal. So that's the card right there. That is the card as things stand. Now, that's 12 matches that I just read off. It would be weird if they didn't add a SmackDown title match since they have a Raw Tag Team title match. So you have to assume we'll probably get like the Usos against American Alpha on the pre-show or something. And it looks like they're probably going to add an Intercontinental title match between Dean Ambrose and Baron Corbin. If they do that, if they add those two matches, that brings the total to 14 matches. That's a lot of friggin' matches. Now to compare, last year, WrestleMania had 12 matches, which is where we're already at without the extra two. The year before that, they had 9 matches. And in New Orleans, the year before that, they had 8 matches. So this would be, if they do the 14, okay, if they have 14 matches on this card, this would be the biggest WrestleMania card since WrestleMania 7 in 1991. That show had 14 matches. 15, actually, if you count, there was a dark match with Coco Beware and the Brooklyn Brawler, because when I think of WrestleMania, I think of Coco Beware against the Brooklyn Brawler. Well, I mean, you know, at least one of those guys is in the WWE Hall of Fame, so I guess it makes sense. But yeah, that's how far back you'd have to go to find a WrestleMania card that big. WrestleMania 7. I think the crowd's going to be half dead by the end of this show. But, you know, with WWE, everything is bigger now. 3-hour Raws, 5-hour pay-per-views, 2-hour pre-shows. I mean, I think WrestleMania is probably starting at, what, 5 o'clock? It's probably going from 5 to 11 at least. That's a long show, so they got to fill time. But that's a lot of matches. That's I think, almost too many matches. Now, out of those 14 potential matches, and here's the other issue I have with this, that's 14, right? I only am genuinely interested in about 4 of them. Aries and Neville, Jericho and Owens, who I think will have a good match, Cena and Nikki against Miz and Maryse, believe it or not, almost entirely due to Miz and Maryse. They've done, I think, an incredible job of single-handedly getting me interested in this. And AJ Styles against Shane McMahon. Not because it's the match I want to see AJ in, it's not the match I would have put him in, but because AJ Styles never has a bad match. He has matches that are better than others, but he never has a bad match. And Shane, for his part, Shane tries when he goes out there. He's a crazy man, and I think they'll probably surprise a lot of people. AJ Styles is not walking into WrestleMania to have a bad match. I can promise you that. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the Shawn Michaels-Vince McMahon match from WrestleMania 22. A waste of a WrestleMania match for Shawn Michaels, but you know what? I'll be damned if he didn't go out there and have a great match with a 60-year-old man. It was probably the best match Vince ever had. Some people might say the Hulk Hogan match, you know, at WrestleMania 19, which was also better than expected. But I would say the match with Shawn as a match was even better. It was probably the best Vince match I've ever seen. And here you have Shane. Shane's younger than Vince was back then. He's also a better athlete than Vince was, so I think it'll be okay. I'm intrigued to see what they do. And I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, by the way, for all the people pissed off that AJ Styles is wrestling Shane McMahon. Don't just think that he's going in there and winning either, because there's been a lot of talk about maybe him going to Raw, possibly. The way they tend to do things here, it's almost like it's very old school in a way. Where back in the day, if you were in, you know, one of the old territories and you were on your way out, You would lose. You would lose to, you know, the top guy, or you would lose to a bunch of people on your way out. You would do the honors, and then you would go on somewhere else. And, you know, it may be the same mentality here, where if AJ really is not going to be on SmackDown anymore, he could very well lose to Shane McMahon at WrestleMania, and I think people's heads would explode if that happened. I think my head might explode. But I could definitely see that happening. I do not think the outcome here of AJ winning is a foregone conclusion. I could see some kind of a screwy finish where, or you know what? They could even add a stipulation between now and then where if AJ loses, he's off SmackDown. Or AJ says, if I can't beat you, then, you know, I don't belong on SmackDown or something like that. And maybe that's a way to get him off the show. I mean, there's any number of ways they could go with this. They could still add a stipulation. But I am intrigued. I am intrigued to see what they do and how this thing turns out. But that's only 4 matches out of a possible 14 that I have any real interest in. That's not good. I don't know that there's ever a WrestleMania where you're truly interested in every single match on the card. I don't think that really ever happens. But 4 out of 14, I mean, I'm just speaking for myself here, that's not good. And that's what I mean. You can fill the card with match after match after match, but if people aren't interested, it's going to make for a long night. And as WrestleManias go, it's a pretty weak card. But sometimes it's the weak ones that overperform because your expectations aren't very high going into it. So you tell me. I want to hear from you guys. Which match are you looking forward to the most and why? Now, while we're on the subject of WrestleMania, Dave Meltzer reports in this week's Wrestling Observer, and to his credit, a lot of these matches that ended up coming to fruition, including AJ and Shane, he was, I think, the first one weeks and weeks and weeks ago to first report them. So, you know, credit to him. But he had a report in the Observer this week that Vince McMahon already has a main event in mind for next year's WrestleMania in New Orleans. And keep in mind, Vince changes his mind as many times as Russo says the word bro in the course of an hour. But they have a destination for his hand-picked heir apparent, Roman Reigns, and that destination is the main event of next year's WrestleMania against Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. A rematch from the main event of WrestleMania 31, a match that Roman was supposedly going to win. He was going to be the one to slay the beast, but Vince got cold feet after the fan reaction to him coming out of that Royal Rumble where they screwed him. Even though he won, they still screwed him, and he's never recovered from that. And so instead, they decided to do the cash-in with Seth Rollins instead. Unfortunately, nobody told Roman's family, and his father, Sika, was pretty pissed off about it backstage that night, but plans change. But Vince McMahon is bound and determined to make this experiment work with Roman Reigns as their lead babyface hero. They are resigned, it seems. And it's sad. It really is sad. Because I do think that you could get a large majority of people to get behind this guy. I don't think he's a lost cause in terms of getting people to cheer him more than they boo him. I don't think it's too late, but you gotta turn him. I sound like a broken record with this, but I'm gonna keep saying it. It's the only way. You've gotta let him go dark first before the people start to really accept him. And if Vince McMahon thinks that just doing the same thing over and over will eventually yield a different outcome, then he truly is out of touch with reality. Then everything that everybody says about him being out of touch is true. Because if he thinks that the reaction to Roman Reigns next year is going to be any different than it is now if they just keep doing the same old thing, he's in for a rude awakening. I don't have a problem with Roman Reigns headlining his third WrestleMania in 4 years. To me, that's not the issue. If he's their top guy, then their top guy should headline WrestleMania. Hogan headlined something like 9 of them in a row, okay? And John Cena had a bunch of them too. But what you're doing isn't working. What do you do when something isn't working? You try something new. You make changes. You make adjustments. And he just refuses to do that. The Usos went heel, and it freshened them up. Neville went heel, and it's been nothing but a positive for the guy. I know those guys are on a lower level, but those are just two examples. Sometimes all it takes is one little change, one little tweak to make all the difference in the world. So if he's all in on doing Roman against Brock next year, I mean, look, it's not like their first match was a dud. I thought they had a really good match at WrestleMania. I thought that was an excellent WrestleMania main event. But there's only one outcome that he should be considering, if that's his plan, for the Undertaker-Roman Reigns match this year, and that is Undertaker eking out a win and Roman Reigns absolutely destroying him when the match is over. So, Undertaker wins, but Reigns is still the one left standing. And so begins the turn that eventually leads him to next year's WrestleMania main event. The fun part, I guess, is then trying to figure out, okay, over the next 12 months, what's, you know the destination, but how do you get there? If you've turned him, but your idea is for him to be a babyface next year, then you kind of you have to come up with a plan of how you're going to get there. Or maybe he's not a babyface. Who says he has to be a babyface? He could still be in the main event next year, but be a heel. I mean, again, there's a few different ways that you can go with this, and the end result could still be Roman Reigns going to WrestleMania and getting a big win over Brock Lesnar. But that's really the only outcome to the Undertaker-Roman Reigns match to me that they should be thinking about right now. Undertaker ekes out that win. Undertaker looked bad at the Royal Rumble. If you don't think so, you're kidding yourself, okay? He did not look good. And so it's still ridiculous, this idea, I guess, that he's going to go in there with their young lion and beat him. But that's what I mean, you know? He ekes out a win. It's a competitive match back and forth. He's still the Undertaker. You know, it's not like it's that far-fetched for him to win a match. But then the key is what happens after the match. The key is how Roman takes that loss. That loss could be the catalyst. That loss could be the catalyst for the turn and for everything that follows. And the people will hate his guts. The people will hate his guts because The Undertaker is one of the very few people, I think, maybe Daniel Bryan is another, there's a very, very small number of people who I think you could beat down to get real heel heat for someone else. A lot of times, unfortunately, now you'll do stuff like that, people will cheer. Look what happened to Dolph Ziggler. When Dolph Ziggler turned, he beat the piss out of Apollo Crews and Kalisto with a chair, and they cheered. They said one more time. Because nobody gives a shit about Kalisto or Apollo Crews. Why should we? Nobody gives a shit about Dolph Ziggler either. Not anymore. But it's you gotta find the right person. And The Undertaker is still beloved. People still love The Undertaker. You get somebody who beats him down, that person is not going to be very well liked. People aren't going to appreciate that. That's the only outcome they should be thinking about right now for that match this year. And the guy will be a heat magnet. You think he's a heat magnet now, but let him play the role. He's miscast right now. Yeah, he's getting the boos, but he's not playing the role. So all you're going to do is just keep down this road. Nothing's ever going to change. People aren't just going to wake up one morning and accept him and say, yeah, I like Roman Reigns. The key is to kind of fuck with their head, get in their head, play, you know, mind games with them. And over the next 6 to 12 months, get them to turn, get them to do a 180 on the guy. It's not too late. But the worst thing that WWE could do is nothing at all and just maintain the status quo. I feel like it's almost like a slogan for this company over the last 10 years. Let's maintain the status quo. We're making money. Let's maintain the status quo. You can't do that. A year from now, when I'm sitting here previewing WrestleMania 34, you know, if they do that, we're going to be looking at the same Roman Reigns we have now. And nothing is going to be any different. And maybe they don't care. That's what Roman says, right? How do you feel about the fact that people boo you? And he gives the same answer John Cena used to give. Well, they paid their money. They can come and do what they want. I love it. They're making noise. And look, it's true. They are making noise. I'd rather have them making noise than sitting on their hands. So that is true. But that's not the desired reaction that they're looking for. And, you know, if they say it doesn't bother them, I don't buy that. I don't believe that. So that's where things stand. Again, plans can very well change. People get hurt. Things happen. But they could still do the right thing. And hopefully they will. Cedric Alexander, speaking of injuries, he is out hurt. Pro Wrestling Sheet broke the news that Cedric is out with an injury. It's going to keep him out for up to 5 months. Said to be a right knee injury. 3 to 5 months is the time frame, which puts his return sometime in the summer. You know, when Cedric first came in, he was the one guy from that Cruiserweight division, from the Cruiserweight Classic, who I looked at. I mean, other than Kota Ibushi, but it was pretty well known he wasn't signing with them. But he was the guy I looked at, and I said, you know, if any of these guys have a real shot to be more than just a Cruiserweight, it's Cedric Alexander. I mean, he made a name for himself in Ring of Honor, and then he came in, lost a bunch of weight, looked to be in the best shape of his life. He's a great wrestler. But he isn't. It's not like I look at him and I think, oh, this guy's a small guy. Like, he looks like a normal average size wrestler. And he's very talented, and there's no reason for him to be restricted just in that cruiserweight bubble. So I looked at him and I said, you know, this guy could go far. I could easily see him as a U.S. champion. I could easily see him as an intercontinental champion. And I still feel that way. And it was interesting to hear JBL agree with Corey Graves on that Bring It to the Table show. They did another one, which was at least slightly better than the first one, but not much. They did another show this week. And, you know, both of them agreed that, you know, the WWE is dropping the ball with 205 Live. They've taken the cruiserweights and they're trying to give them characters and all this. Like, they're trying to WWE-ize them, when what they should be doing is following the blueprint that they use for the Cruiserweight Classic. That tournament was fantastic. It makes me very sad that they're not going to do it again. I guess they could, but it kind of doesn't make any sense. You've got a whole division now. You don't need to have a Cruiserweight Classic. They're going to have a women's tournament. They just had a UK tournament. They're not going back and doing another Cruiserweight Classic. I almost wish they would. I wish they would have just left it alone as a one-year, as an annual thing. But what they were saying is what WWE should be doing on 205 Live and in that division is just letting these guys go out there and wow people. And show more of their real personality. Do more personality profiles. Make it more, you know, it would make it unique. It would actually be unique if on Monday Night Raw, when they're doing all their usual character driven stuff, if in the middle of all that, you have something that's portrayed as more of an athletic competition. And if you're going to do interviews and profile pieces on these guys, make it more realistic. Make it more sports-like. That would actually differentiate it from everything else on the show, but instead they're trying to fit it in. They're trying to fit it into Raw. How can we Raw this division? You know what I mean? And so let's, you know, send Jack Gallagher out there with an umbrella and let's do, you know, crazy Alicia Fox and Noam Dar is this crazed, sex-crazed pervert who wants to, you know, screw her. And, you know, they're trying to, it looks like an episode of Main Event. And Main Event and Superstars, I don't even know if Superstars is around anymore. That's not a priority. That people don't look at that stuff and think of it as anything special. You want to look at the cruiserweights as something special. So it was interesting to hear the two of them basically say that. But Cedric has real potential. He really does. And hopefully when he comes back at some point, he'll have a chance to show that. We have another wrestler death to report on. I saw that Chuck Berry died this week too, which is very sad. He was 90. I don't know too many wrestlers or wrestler deaths that I've been talking about where guys have made it to 90. I don't know what the average lifespan is of a pro wrestler from figure like the 80s on, but I'm guessing it's a lot less than 90. But unfortunately, this is becoming a weekly segment here on this show. This week it was Dennis Stamp. Who became this cult-like figure as the guy on the trampoline in the movie Beyond the Mat, Terry Funk. Basically, the story there was Terry Funk was having a retirement show, probably the first of many, or one of many retirements that Terry Funk has had over the years. And so, of the different stories in that movie, there were like three different stories. Terry Funk was one of them, and they followed him as he prepared and planned for this retirement show down in, I guess it would have been Amarillo. And, you know, Dennis Stamp is in there and he's telling Dennis, who's an old friend of his and a former wrestler, I got no spot for you on the show. You're not booked. But then later on he says, well, look, I want you to be the referee for my match with Bret Hart. And out of pride or whatever, he's like, well, I'm not booked, Terry. I'm not booked. I can't do it. And eventually he convinces him to do it and he's the referee for the match. So that was Dennis Stamp. He died this week, 70 years old. He died from a recurrence of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And he wasn't just some guy bouncing on a trampoline either. I mean, he wrestled for many years going back to the 70s, mostly down in Texas. Although he was also a journeyman in WWE and a little bit in the AWA. He first got diagnosed with cancer in 2011. Stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Stage 4 anything has a terrible prognosis. But he beat it. And I guess the cancer came back last year, and this time it spread to his bone marrow, which scares the hell out of me. I have to go for a bone marrow test myself next month. I'm not looking forward to that. It's like, can we have like a 1 week reprieve this year from having to talk about somebody dying? It's just, this year has been ridiculous so far. So, very sad to hear that, that Dennis Stamp lost his battle. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw from this past week. I don't have a whole lot to say about Raw, I'll be honest with you. There's so much stuff to cover this week, and I was kind of in and out of Raw when I watched it, but I saw the key stuff. Raw was live from Detroit. Raw Twitter poll, 2,400 of you voted. 47% thumbs up, 53% thumbs down. For the record, I have to just say this. There's a small group of people, small group, that the last few weeks seem to have a problem with the vote totals in my polls. They think that they're skewed too negative. People are just, they're being too negative. They, you know, they look at yours, they say, and look at the polls that WWE does on their Twitter and compare the two, and you'll see the difference. Those have more of the casual audience. Well, I did look at WWE's poll, and it was more thumbs up than thumbs down, but there isn't much of a difference at all. It is exaggerated. Their poll had 55% thumbs up, 45% thumbs down. Mine was 47-53. You listen to some of these people, you would think that it's 20-80 every week. That my polls are like 10% up, 90% down. I can't remember the last time Raw did that poorly. Raw actually does better than it deserves to most of the time. Raw had about 4 or 5 straight weeks of thumbs up over thumbs down in our poll up until a couple of weeks ago where it started to trend down again. But, you know, people conveniently forget that fact. They leave that fact out. Selective memory. Take a ginkgo biloba. You'll thank me later. So the main story on this show was Stephanie McMahon coming to Mick Foley. All of a sudden, she was being very friendly to Mick Foley. Bipolar Stephanie. And she comes to Mick Foley and she says, you know, to show strong leadership, you've got to trim the fat and pick one person before this night is over, from the Raw roster, to fire. Which, of course, makes Mick Foley very sad. He doesn't want to have to fire anybody. So he is tasked with finding somebody to fire before the night is over. So this was the show-long storyline. We'll get back to that. We had Roman Reigns had a match against Jinder Mahal. Riveting, I know. And then, when the match was over, so of course Roman wins, Shawn Michaels makes a surprise appearance, and out comes Shawn Michaels. They trotted him out there, and he's talking about how Roman, I know The Undertaker better than anybody, and look, I know what it's like to have a chip on your shoulder and have everybody secretly hoping you fail. He goes, I like you, I'm on your side. He's basically just trying to tell him, I guess basically just don't take The Undertaker lightly and all this kind of stuff. And Roman says, look, I appreciate the advice, but all due respect, Undertaker retired you, and now I'm going to retire him. Which is actually a good line. Of course, it got massive boos, but I thought it was a good line. But that's not even the best part. The best part of Raw from this week, better than what happened at the end of the show, better than anything else, was as Roman Reigns is leaving, he kind of turns to look back at Shawn Michaels in the ring. He's on the ramp. He turns to look back at the ring, and we hear a commotion from the crowd as though somebody is coming out. And just as Roman turns back around, there's Braun Strowman, who steamrolls him over. He slams into this guy like a hit-and-run collision. And it knocks Roman Reigns backwards. He rolls over. Somehow he ends up wedged on the floor between the guardrail and the ramp. Words cannot do this justice. You gotta go back and watch it. They showed a bunch of replays. They showed it in slow motion. You gotta watch the slow motion replay of this if you can find it. Or go on their YouTube channel. You could probably find the clip and then slow the speed down. Can we all just agree that this was the best thing ever? I watched this thing so many times. It's like, and how Braun Strowman has no match at WrestleMania, I'll never know. But man, this was unbelievable. Just, you know, we talk a lot about, and some of you guys have emailed me about this. Do things look kind of soft to you on TV, like on WWE television? They're the punches that they throw and some of the stuff they do. And I mean, sometimes that's the case, but you can't say that about this. This was a full on collision. I thought Roman may have hurt his elbow or his arm on the way down. I'm sure he was all banged up. maybe even a little shaken up. But it just goes to show, like, they've done such a tremendous job of making Braun Strowman out to be this wrecking machine. Somebody said it was the irresistible force against the immovable object. I don't know which is which, but the object moved. The object got knocked about 15 feet. But that was great. You know, Roman sold it like a champ. Strowman is a beast. I can't say enough good things about that. The show closing angle, the only other thing really of note on this show, involved Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon in the ring. They were out, of course, to find out who Mick had decided to fire. And predictably, Foley, after kind of beating around the bush for a while, said that it was Stephanie! He had chosen Stephanie McMahon to fire. Now, of course, anybody with a brain, I'm sure, realized that Mick Foley can't fire Stephanie McMahon. And Stephanie said as much, "You can't fire me, Mick." Triple H came out. So we had a confrontation face-to-face in the ring between Triple H and Mick Foley, old rivals. And Triple H, he just went all in on this guy. He just talked down to Foley, insulted him, talked about his kids. Think about your kids, your daughter. Oh, she wants to be a WWE superstar one day. And then your son, Dewey. I think it's Dewey or Huey or Jewey or whatever his name is. He goes, you know, he's working behind the scenes as a writer for WWE. You might want to think about your kid's future. Like, really, like, real heel stuff, you know? Like, what a dick. So Foley ends up despondent in the corner. I don't think they actually fired him. Like, I don't remember Stephanie saying, "You're fired," but it was almost like, "Get the hell out of here." And Foley's in the corner. He's got his back turned. And you can see he's reaching into his waist. So, you know, he's pulling out the sock. People start to cheer. Triple H is, while Stephanie is talking, Triple H is watching this. He's like, "Get the hell out of here." He starts to walk over to Foley. As soon as he gets there, Foley turns around. He puts him in the mandible claw. Big pop from the crowd. And as Foley has Triple H in the mandible claw, Stephanie gives him a low blow. And down goes Mick Foley. Maybe that was his official firing. I don't see how he can continue on as the general manager at this point. And Triple H has taken his jacket off now. He's gonna finish off Mick Foley. He's gonna give Mick Foley a pedigree. But Seth Rollins' music hits. He limps out on a single crutch. His right knee is in a brace. And Triple H is telling him to get in the ring. And Rollins throws the crutch down. It's basically like, uh-oh, he's not hurt. He's healed. And he runs into the ring and they start punching each other. And, you know, the people are into this. And Rollins kicks Triple H in the gut. He knocks him out of the ring with a drop kick. Fans are into this. They're actually getting behind Seth Rollins. This would have been a good way to end the show, right? Seth Rollins is back. It's official. He'll be okay for WrestleMania. He just knocked Triple H out of the ring. The people are going nuts. This is great. Well, they kept going. And what they had Triple H do, he grabbed the crutch, which Rollins had left on the ground. He picks up the crutch. He goes into the ring. And Seth Rollins comes off the ropes, and Triple H hits him in the bad knee with the crutch. And Rollins falls to the ground in agony, and Triple H just hits him. He breaks the crutch. He puts an Indian deathlock on Seth Rollins on the bad knee. Rollins is just screaming, "Oh God, oh God." He's screaming in agony. Referees are trying to break it up. Triple H hits him with the crutch again when Rollins tries to get up. So there's two schools of thought on this. I'm kind of torn. When I watched it on Monday night, I thought to myself, my God, like, you know, like, this did not do Seth Rollins any favors. The guy comes out there, like the big conqueror, like the big returning hero. He drops the crutch. He looks kind of cool. He goes in there. He beats the shit out of Triple H. And they can't let the guy stand tall for one night. Like, you got two more weeks until WrestleMania. You could very easily have Triple H come back next week in Brooklyn and get his heat back by doing a beatdown angle on Seth Rollins. Could you just give Rollins his one night? And no, they kept going. And Rollins, who brought the crutch out, ends up getting beaten down by it. And he's laying on the ground screaming, oh God, in just agony. And I just thought, man, that was dumb. But I will give them credit. It was a hot angle. It did put a lot of heat on Triple H. I just think they probably should have saved this for another week or two. I would have just let the show end there and given Rollins his moment, but they just couldn't help themselves. And we'll see. Maybe in Brooklyn tomorrow night, Seth Rollins will do something. He'll get his revenge. I hope so. We'll see what happens. So yeah, it was a hot angle. It was hot for Triple H. I can't say the same for Seth Rollins. But hopefully he'll have his moment. We've got two more Raws left. Let's talk about SmackDown Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Just shy of 2,000 votes, only a little less than our Raw poll. 75% thumbs up, 25% thumbs down. I can't ever think of Pittsburgh without thinking about that Bret Hart promo in 1997 where he said that if they were to give an enema to the United States, they would stick the hose in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A promo, by the way, that Bret has since said he regrets. So thanks to Bret Hart, I will forever associate Pittsburgh with an object being shoved up one's ass. Not exactly my idea of a good time, but to each their own. Tom Phillips and JBL called this show by themselves, a rare two-man announce booth, and while I still find JBL to be insufferable at times, it was much, much better with the two-man team. David Otunga, they said, was away filming a movie role, and Mauro Ranallo, they claim, was stranded by the bad weather. I guess he couldn't get a flight out, and maybe that's true. But maybe it isn't. There was an item in this week's Observer that insinuated that the weather excuse they gave may have been just that. It may have been an excuse. Meltzer was asked about it. He would not elaborate. He only said that he can't say anything yet because he doesn't have anything on the record. It would be a betrayal of his source or sources if he went and talked about it. He had an off-the-record conversation with someone and just doesn't want to betray that. So that's pretty cryptic. And look, it's entirely possible that Mauro is back at the announce desk this Tuesday, could be back by the time some of you listen to this, he may have already been back on TV, but that does not necessarily mean there isn't something going on here. This whole thing is very, very weird. JBL has me blocked on Twitter, along with, I think, half the U.S. population, so I didn't see this tweet initially, but he took a shot at Mauro on Twitter for missing the show. Now, JBL takes shots at everybody, it's tongue-in-cheek, it's all part of the act. But he took a shot at Mauro on Twitter for missing the show, and then he deleted the tweet. He actually tagged Mauro, and he said, "I made the show, everyone made the show, everyone. Maybe he shouldn't have bashed me if he wasn't going to show up." I have no idea what that's all about. I know JBL rips on him all the time on the air, but that didn't sound like a playful dig to me. Plus, he deleted it after, so he must have realized, hey, I better take this down. So that whole thing is weird. Look, I don't know what's going on here, how this is going to end, but WWE would be insane to get rid of the guy. I don't think they're firing him. I mean, they would be out of their mind to get rid of this guy with three different brands, okay? And don't forget that report from back in January, I think it was from PW Insider initially, that Michael Cole has expressed to people his desire, there's no timetable on this, but he has expressed a desire to step away from announcing and take on more of a behind-the-scenes role. Cole already has a behind-the-scenes role. You know, I don't know if it's SmackDown or NXT. I mean, he'll be in the back, like, on headset helping the announcers. I think it was when ESPN did that NXT special, and they had the big meeting in the boardroom with Triple H and all the trainers and everybody. Cole was in there. Cole is a very important player behind the scenes in that company, maybe more so than he is even on camera. And so I guess he just wants to begin the process of, you know, focusing more on that and stepping away from the announcing. That's what I got out of that. So all of these things, I mean, they're going to need to have a top shelf play-by-play guy. And Tom Phillips is kind of on the ascent. I mean, he may be that guy one day for them, but he's not that yet. And so I don't think it's a case of WWE getting rid of the guy. But here's the other thing to consider, okay? And Mauro has been very public about his battle with bipolar disorder. He was diagnosed with bipolar when he was 19. He's been very public about his battle with depression in the past. Him suddenly going radio silent on Twitter, as active as he usually is on there, is very worrisome. He has not tweeted. I checked before I started recording. He still has not tweeted in almost a week. And so I hope everything's okay with him. I hope we'll see him back on TV soon. I will say, and by no means am I looking to see WWE get rid of him, but SmackDown did not miss a beat with that two-man announce booth on Tuesday. I dig the two-man booth. Shocking, I know. But the one thing I think we could all agree on, David Otunga is a waste out there. Whatever movie he's filming, they should just super glue the lock on his trailer shut and never let him out. Thank you to all of the eagle-eyed people who pointed out Tom Savini was sitting right behind the announcers on SmackDown. He was Sex Machine from the movie From Dusk Till Dawn. The irony of Sex Machine sitting directly behind Tom Phillips is just too perfect. He's also a famous makeup effects guy for a lot of the horror movies. You know, he did the makeup for Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th, and he worked on Creepshow, which is one of my favorites. I love Creepshow. It's really a shame, you know, all of the over-reliance these days on CGI effects. I think what guys like Savini were able to do with those old movies, it's almost become like a lost art. You know, I find those effects far more scary to go back and watch than a lot of the effects they use in horror films today. I don't know, there's just something unnerving about it. There was something unnerving also about watching Bray Wyatt rubbing someone's dead ashes all over his face and seemingly getting off on it. Even Tom Phillips was probably thinking, man, why didn't I think of that? So here's the thing with this segment. I know I'm skipping around here, but that's how I roll. I'm more unpredictable than WWE is. I may launch into a top 10 list next. You never know on this show. What I liked about this is that they tried to address something that I did not like about the way they did the payoff with Orton and Bray. I thought it would have been better saved for WrestleMania, right? Orton's fighting Bray, but he's still sort of subservient to him, or Bray still thinks he has some kind of hold or power over Randy, and it just gets to a point where he goes for an RKO, but he hesitates and drops to his knees to, you know, pay homage to Bray, and then he nails it, or something like that. You know, get the big pop and maybe the win. They at least had Orton explain it here or try to explain it. He said, you know, hitting you with an RKO wouldn't have been enough, he said. He found the one thing that Bray loves the most, that being Sister Abigail, and now he's completely isolated. So, at least they tried. That at least was good. Then we got Bray Wyatt on the Titantron back inside the burned-down shack. He called Orton the spawn of Satan. Sister Abigail lives, her heart still beats, he says. Her power is now his. He is born again. And that's when he reached down, he grabbed the ashes, he began rubbing them all over himself, which is a visual I could have done without. I suppose if Orton is not winning the championship at WrestleMania, then to save the big reveal and the RKO for then only for him to lose would be anticlimactic, but I still like my idea better. I just do. Plus, all Orton has done now, think about this, all Randy Orton has done by revealing his nefarious plan is he's pissed off Bray Wyatt. He has pissed off the WWE champion. It would have been smarter, right, in storyline. It would have been smarter for this guy to go into WrestleMania with Bray thinking he would still control Randy. Ah, my man won the Royal Rumble. We've got this in the bag. It's going to be a night off for me at WrestleMania. And then in the end, Orton drops him just at the right moment, wins the title, and it pays off the entire storyline. Even though I don't think Orton should win the championship. you know what? You really want to make a new star? I know it's funny for me to say new star because Bray's already been around for 3 or 4 years, but you want to make a new star? You have Bray Wyatt kick out of the RKO at WrestleMania and you have him beat Orton clean with his move. That's what you do. Question is, does WWE have the balls to do it? I'm sure Randy does. Randy Orton laid down 2 straight pay-per-views for Mark Henry to the World's Strongest Slam, okay? If he could do that for Mark Henry, he could do that for Bray Wyatt. But it's not about what Randy Orton wants, it's about what WWE wants. And I guess if any promises were made to him after he took one for the team at SummerSlam and let Brock Lesnar split his head open, who knows what they may have promised him in return. Remember what CM Punk said. Vince McMahon used to always say to him, I owe you one, pal. I owe you one. So, who knows what promises they may have made to Randy. But, for as much as this, you know, there's been talk about, well, Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt is the main event solo monster of WrestleMania, not Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. Why do you keep saying that? Why do you keep saying Brock and Goldberg? Because it is. But for as much talk about this being the main event, right? Randy Orton won Royal Rumble. He's going to the main event of WrestleMania. This WWE Championship match, I can appreciate the long-term storytelling, but this does not feel like a WrestleMania main event at all. I hope they have a good match. I remember at least one of the matches they had last fall, which was just boring as shit. So hopefully, with the story now behind them, they've got, I don't know, they go all out. It's WrestleMania, and hopefully they'll go out there and have a good match. But this does not feel like a WrestleMania main event. And I am actually looking forward more, believe it or not, to John Cena and Nikki Bella against Miz and Maryse. Now, there's a match that's been spitting some hot fire over the last couple of weeks. Sound like Becky Lynch now. Miz and Maryse were their own guests on Miz TV. And so here's the deal with this. Let's tell the story. Maryse told a story about how she and Nikki used to be the best of friends, and that she was offered a contract a few years ago to come back to WWE to appear on the first season of Total Divas. Her and Kelly Kelly were going to come back, but she claims, Nikki Bella sabotaged them by telling Maryse not to sign the contract because she thought that she can get herself a deal for more money. And so Maryse held out, and WWE pulled the offer, and then later, Maryse claims that Nikki texted her to let her know that her and Brie would be the stars of Total Divas. She said, "You stole my money from me. You took away 3 years of my life." She called Nikki a lying, backstabbing bitch. Now, where facts end and fiction begins, honestly, I don't know. I know this. Maria Kanellis does not like the Bella Twins. And many years ago, Maria claimed that she had an offer to come back to WWE for a match at WrestleMania. And the reason it never happened was because of the twins did what they could to block her from coming back to WWE. And she claimed, this is what Maria said now, she claimed that the Bellas also blocked Kelly Kelly and Maryse from coming back. Now, I don't know that Kelly Kelly or Maryse has ever denied that. It's possible that it's true, although it is only one side of the story. It could be true, and maybe the writers are now taking that real story and twisting it a little bit by making it about Total Divas. I always say, you know, the best stories are the ones, and I hear Jim Ross say this a lot, and he is 100% correct, that the best stories always borrow from reality. Maryse, I think, has been awesome of late, and maybe that's why. Maybe that's why Maryse has been so good. Maybe there's some real resentment there. Who knows? I'm sure they're on good terms now, but who knows? Who knows? Cena and Nikki came out, Ms. Maryse bailed. Nikki said Maryse was never her best friend. She challenged Maryse to a match. Miz said no. Daniel Bryan came out. Poor Miz. They're all part of the same family. The fix is in for the Miz. Bryan said, "I wish I could punch you in the face." So again, the Miz, I'm telling you, when the Miz loses this match at WrestleMania, he's going to have a hell of a case because this entire family has been conspiring against him. Now you got the general manager coming out and flat out saying, "I wish I could punch you in the face. You're a terrible wrestler and I wish I could punch you." So Miz is going to have a hell of a case. He'll have a hell of a case if he wants to use that as a reason to draft himself over to Raw too. So anyway, Bryan says, "I can't punch you in the face, but I know who can." And so he makes the match for, and I quote, "The ultimate thrill ride, WrestleMania, John Cena and Nikki Bella against Miz and Maryse. The ultimate thrill ride." Can you imagine The Undertaker having to stand there 2 weeks before his WrestleMania match back in the day against, you know, Diesel, talking about the ultimate thrill ride? Or even Diesel talking about his match with The Undertaker and having to say, "ultimate thrill ride." This is when branding and buzzwords run amok. This is what happens. This week they had two announcers, right? They had two announcers out there. But most weeks they have four on SmackDown. Leave the branding and the buzzword bullshit to the announcers. That aside, I thought this was a great segment. Alexa Bliss had a non-title match with Mickie James, and Mickie won with the Mick Kick. People were tweeting me this week, asking me my thoughts about this report that WWE is unhappy with Alexa Bliss's in-ring performance of late. I didn't respond to any of it because it was bullshit to begin with. And, you know, people got to do a better job of separating bullshit from non-bullshit. I mean, I guess anything on the internet could be BS, but there are more trusted sources of news when it comes to pro wrestling than some of these websites that quote-unquote break these stories. Please, people, for the love of God, consider the source on these things when you hear them. If it's from some obscure website and you can't find a mention of it anywhere else from any other credible source, then consider it bogus. I could not believe how quickly this nonsense spread. That's all it is. It's all nonsense. Jim Ross tweeted that Baron Corbin is not being done any favors by having to memorize his lines. No shit. You don't say. None of these guys are. None of these guys are being done any favors by having to memorize shitty dialogue like it's a freaking George Lucas movie. Some people can't pull off the scripted stuff as good as others. Some people can do it flawlessly. And a lot of other people can't. They just can't. They're just not a good enough actor to pull it off. You know, I know they like to think of themselves as some kind of scripted TV drama. Here's a newsflash. You're not. This isn't House of Cards. There is no Kevin Spacey on this roster. Corbin can talk. I know this because I watch Talking Smack. The man can talk. And he does it well enough that I can never really tell if he's just, if he's in character or if that's really just who he is, but turned up. That's a credit to him. Just let him be himself. Okay, let's talk about the main angle on this show. Shane McMahon and AJ Styles. AJ Styles came out right at the start, and he cut, for all intents and purposes, a babyface promo. He gave example after example after example of all the hoops that he's had to jump through to get his shot in the main event at WrestleMania. And yet, he was consistently denied. And he said, I'm going to address this with Shane McMahon when Shane gets to the building. And boy, did he ever. A lot's been said about this match. I've spoken my piece about what I think of this match at WrestleMania. I wasn't all that enthusiastic about it. I still can't say I'm sold on it, but they did exactly what they had to do to put some heat on this match. If you're gonna do a beatdown, you better do it right. And they did it right here. As soon as Shane got to the building, AJ jumped him. He beat the shit out of him. John Cena should study tape of AJ's punches here if he wants to learn how to throw a believable right hand. He then threw Shane headfirst through a car window, and, you know, later they showed a slow motion replay of from inside the car of Shane's head going through the window, which was campy as all hell. But you know what? They also, if you remember, they also showed a rear mirror angle of Marty Jannetty being thrown through the barbershop window. And logic would say, why was there a camera positioned there? I don't know, but there was. They've always done this. But that was a great angle, and so was this one. So, you know what? It's okay to ignore stupid shit like that every now and then, if it's worth it in the end. Fit Finley ran over to help Shane and call for a medic. Renee Young was there, pointed out that Shane was bleeding from the head. Yes, we got blood here on SmackDown. I'm sure it was prop blood. Hey, Tom Savini. Tom Savini was in the house, you never know. But blood is blood. I was happy to see it. Styles went to collect his stuff and leave, and on his way out, he was confronted by Daniel Bryan, who said he lost all respect for AJ, and he proceeded to fire him, which actually got boos from the crowd. AJ Styles got the fans to do the impossible. They booed Daniel Bryan. You know, Vince is in the back. He's all like, you know, goddamn, where was this guy 3 years ago? We could have used him. I love how Vince now has that voice where it sounds like he swallows concrete. He gargles concrete every morning. So they showed multiple replays of the angle throughout the entire show, as they should have. This was the focal point of the entire 2 hours. They started with it, and they ended with it. And during the main event, it was American Alpha against the Usos. The match itself, it felt like an afterthought. You know it was because they did a split screen in the middle of the match to show us a shot of Shane McMahon walking around backstage, refusing to go to the hospital. When they cut to a split screen in the middle of your match, you're no longer the focal point. The other guy is. So the Usos won. We got a shot of Shane in the back at the gorilla position. He was walking out. He came out with a microphone. He said, AJ Styles has no opponent for WrestleMania. Well, he does now. And they very abruptly cut to Chrisley Knows Best. It was a very abrupt cutaway. And you know what? I liked it. It reminded me of how those shows used to go off the air back in the day. Hey, sometimes they would go off the air in the middle of a match. And you'd have Vince on commentary saying, we'll bring you to the results of this match at the beginning of the show next week. That was commonplace back in like 93 when they first started doing this show. But more importantly, how many times have we complained about these McMahon promos, right? Usually it's the other two McMahons, or three if we count Paul McMahon. How many times do people bitch and moan about these long 20-minute promos? It takes them 20 minutes to say something that could be said in no more than five. Well, Shane came out, he made his announcement, and that was it. Best McMahon promo ever. I hope Stephanie was watching. So they got my interest with this. Now let's see what they can do at WrestleMania. You know, we could talk about what a terrible opponent Shane is for AJ and how AJ deserves better. But AJ Styles, my takeaway from all this is AJ Styles was the star of the show. He was the MVP, the focal point of the entire 2 hours. He got to open the show with an in-ring promo. He got to beat the shit out of the commissioner of the show. He got fired by the general manager. And then I guess he was unfired at the end of the show and put into a match at WrestleMania. On Talking Smack, Daniel Bryan said that he's going to have a talk with Shane because it did not sound like Shane was of sound body and mind when he made that announcement. But I thought that angle just made this entire show. And this was not a great episode of SmackDown anyway. But without it, without that angle, it would have been just a bad show.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, for March 15th, the Authors of Pain made short work of the Ely brothers. They went for their super collider move, and they barely grazed. That's the one where they picked them up, and they basically powerbombed their backs back-to-back right into each other. Barely grazed each other. That looked bad. Finished them off with the Last Chapter. I think the crowd passed away during this match. Just total silence. Afterwards, Paul Ellering cut a promo about how he created the algorithm for greatness in tag team wrestling. DIY came out claiming not to know what algorithm even means. They want their rematch. They're at a university, too. That's terrible. They want their rematch for the NXT tag team titles. This then brought out the Revival, who called themselves the greatest tag team of all time. Well, it's good to have goals. But that's like Josh Matthews calling himself the greatest play-by-play guy in the business. Like, let's not get carried away here. William Regal came out. He apparently was to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year, and that appears to have been scrapped. Because I think they're all done announcing people for the Hall of Fame. So maybe next year. He made a triple threat match for the NXT Tag Team titles at TakeOver Orlando. Said that it will be an elimination match. I figured it would be a three-way with the Revival taking the losing fall, so if they wanted to take the belts off of AOP, they could do it without beating them. But you know what? I like this even better. This is even better. They either retain the titles or they get beaten for the first time. There's no cop-out finish here. Then came some great news. Heavy Machinery is debuting soon. That's the team of Tucker Knight and Otis Dojovic. They got a video. They got video treatment here. So that means they're getting a push this time. They're not just going to show up randomly and lose. And this is fantastic news. I like these two guys. We then got a weird yet awesome Asuka video showing clips of her kicking ass interspersed with clips of her sitting by the pool. It was the very first time they were showing off her sexier side. The sexier side of Asuka. But still showing the side that says, I could kill you if I wanted to. Nikki Cross made short work of Macy Estrella. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. I think the L's are silent. We were told that Macy was once a member of the military. Thank you for your service. Here's 6 neck breakers for your trouble. That's how many neck breakers Nikki Cross gave this woman. 6. Before she finally pinned her. You know, back in the day, that would put somebody out for months. I remember Psycho Sid powerbombing Shawn Michaels 3 times. We didn't see Shawn Michaels for probably, what, 6 weeks? 8 weeks before he came back? He powerbombed him so hard he went babyface. Today, you know, Roman Reigns could spear somebody clear off the stage and they'd be back on TV the next week in a neck brace cutting a 20-minute promo. So, times have changed. No Way Jose and Ty Dillinger finally ran down to fight Sanity, but again, the numbers game. There's too many of them and not enough of the other ones, and so they got laid out. Cassius Ohno and Bobby Roode for the NXT Championship. I like this, the whole setup here. They did pre-match promos with them in the back, and let me just say this about Cassius Ohno, because I got some tweets from people, you know, saying, oh, what's he wearing, and the thing with Cassius Ohno is, I think we can all agree, the dude can go, right? We all know that. The fact that he's a little fat doesn't matter. The guy can wrestle. He can move. And I'm very happy that they finally seem to be past this whole, you know, you need to be 6'2" and jacked to the gills stuff. Not that there aren't a lot of talented 6'2" jacked up dudes out there, but, you know, you want to have a nice mix of tall guys, strong guys, short guys, fat guys, bald guys, all kinds of guys, and girls. But Cassius Ohno was out there wearing a white tucked-in basketball jersey. That is a terrible look. That is just awful. Forget the fact that white is just an unflattering color to begin with. A tucked-in basketball jersey? I want Ohno to be drafted to SmackDown after WrestleMania so that Tyler Breeze and Fandango can charge him with a fashion felony. And maybe they can help this man out. He needs to change his getup fast because he looks ridiculous. Not Shawn Michaels referee shorts ridiculous, but ridiculous all the same. The first half of this match was boring, but they were building. They were building to the second half. That's when things really picked up. So they followed a tried and true formula, but getting there I thought was just a chore. I was very quickly losing interest in this match, but they got me back into it. Ohno sold and sold and sold forever until he finally got to make the big comeback. He even busted out a kip up, which was very impressive. Ohno connected with the rolling elbow, but it was unfortunate for him because Bobby Roode got sent out to the floor. Couldn't pin him. He had to go outside. He had to throw him back into the ring. All of this took time. And Ohno got back in. He went for a running senton, which is a move that we see very commonly with Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens. And Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens are, especially Samoa Joe, you know, they're big boys. But Ohno landed right on top of Bobby Roode with all of his weight. This wasn't like, let me graze your shoulder, let 80% of my body weight hit the mat. No, he landed right on top of Bobby Roode. He crushed this man and had to knock the wind out of him. He got a near fall out of it, so then they exchanged a few more reversals. Bobby Roode finally hit him with the glorious DDT. He got the pin, and so it will be Bobby Roode defending the NXT Championship in Orlando at TakeOver against Shinsuke Nakamura. Speaking of Nakamura, he is not on the poster for the European tour that NXT is doing in May. They have all the other key players on there, but not him. And that is just another indication that he is probably on his way up to the main roster very soon, probably after WrestleMania. I see things going down this way. I mean, I see him losing to Bobby Roode again. And then probably I could see them sliding Hideo Itami into the top mix. And he can end up feuding with Roode. Itami just came back. He was on the shelf for 5 months with that neck injury through no fault of his own. As far as Nakamura, I really do think SmackDown is the better fit for him. I know I keep hearing about Raw, but I think SmackDown is the better fit if they do what I suggested last week. I was asked a question about doing a battle for brand supremacy at WrestleMania between AJ Styles and Finn Balor instead of doing AJ and Shane. Of course, now it's all a moot point anyway, but I would love to move AJ over to Raw and then feud him with Balor. Do a double turn with Anderson and Gallows going with Balor, and you have AJ as one of the top babyfaces on the brand. He could feud with Balor, he could feud with Joe, he could feud with Owens. There's a lot of options there for AJ Styles. If AJ does move, then you could debut Nakamura on SmackDown. But if they do not move AJ to Raw, Raw could really use him. So I know why they would want him there. I could see why, and I could see Nakamura going there if that's the case. Where he goes ultimately depends on, I think, other moves. I don't think, like, independently, again, I would put him on SmackDown, but this is really going to be determined, I think, by the other moves that they have planned post-WrestleMania. I've even seen rumors that, you know, there's been talk of Roman Reigns possibly being drafted to SmackDown, especially if the idea is to build to him and Brock, you know, at WrestleMania 34, if that's the working main event, then you keep them away from each other for an entire year. I mean, you could always, you know, find some way to get him back on Raw or do an inter-brand match at WrestleMania next year and do him and Brock. But I guess to get him away and maybe freshen him up a bit, give him some new opponents. Not that Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt are exactly new opponents for Roman Reigns, although it would be fresh if Roman went heel, which goes back to what I was saying earlier, but I won't hold my breath on that. So we'll see where Nakamura lands. I fully expect him, though, to be on TV either that Monday or Tuesday after Mania. Some more Impact news. Now, usually when I say that, I follow that with some not-so-good news. But there is good news. The good news is that week two of the new and improved Impact went up in the ratings to the tune of 344,000 viewers. That is the highest number on Pop TV since November 3rd. Of last year. And it's still early. It's only week two, but whatever they're doing, perhaps they're on the right track. Good for them. The bad news is that they're still acting like a bunch of jackasses with this whole situation with the Hardys. Rebby Hardy took to Twitter again this week, and when that happens, you better be wearing a bulletproof vest. She was on the warpath again. Here's what prompted it. This is the update straight from Rebby herself. I'm going to read a bunch of tweets here because I think they're all relevant. She said, update, TNA sent an absolutely laughable legal proposal regarding trademark usage and ownership. We tried to play nice, truly. Oh well. Fun facts. Senor Benjamin never signed one piece of paper stating TNA could ever use, broadcast, or profit from his image or likeness. Maxell was never legally cleared to work or appear on camera. Want to check those TV child labor laws and get back to me, TNA? Trying to prevent someone from legally making money is torturous interference of business and a huge offense. I filed for the quote, or the hashtag broken trademark when all of the shady business from Jeff Jarrett and Anthem got back to me weeks before his contract was up. If owning my husband was that important, why not file or apply, oh, I don't know, before his contract was up? Before you found out that I did. And the store that I've been running for over 5 years, 100% by myself, with my original designs and my sole effort and investment, yeah, they want a cut. Theme song I composed and graciously allowed them to use gratis when they were having licensing issues with music? Well, they're claiming that too. If the character is TNA's, where are the format sheets? They don't exist. Where are the scripts? They can't be produced because they don't exist. And, she says, the best part, surprise! The Hardy Show was behind the scenes recording our entire creative process this entire time. See you soon. And then at the end she says, from now on, someone will be speaking for us regarding this ridiculous situation that we have been put in, and not on Twitter. Thanks for the support. So I guess no more Rebby Hardy tirades. They have smartened up, gotten themselves some legal representation, who I'm sure the first thing that person said was, get the hell off Twitter. I said it might not have been the smartest thing for her to go do this. But ultimately, this is all going to come down to the language in the contract on all of this stuff. The part about the store, if that's true, is what gets me. That pisses me off. That is ridiculous. That Shop Matt Hardy store has been up for years. There was never any issue with it before. Now all of a sudden Anthem wants a cut. And I don't know what they want to cut of. Do they want a cut of what's already been sold? Do they want to see receipts? Do they want a cut of what's sold going forward? Because I thought they were closing up the shop because she was so busy. I mean, look, she's a pregnant woman. She's having a kid in a couple of months. I could have sworn I just read a story about them winding down and closing down the store. So I don't know exactly what Anthem is looking for a cut of. It could be past stuff that they've sold. It's such a petty move on their part. It just is. And again, maybe the language in the contract has the Hardys dead to rights, but the store thing, you know, I just don't see what's gained from this. It's so scummy. The whole thing is so scummy. Whatever. It looks like it's going to be up to the courts because this thing is no closer to being resolved now than it was a week ago, so we'll see how it plays out. I'm sure this is far from the last that we're going to be hearing about this. Some Ring of Honor contract news from this week's Observer, and this is important because Ring of Honor's loss could very well be a very big gain for WWE over the next several months. There are a lot of names that are likely on their way out of Ring of Honor, if they are not already out of Ring of Honor, who may be on their way to NXT in the very near future. And not a day too soon, I say, because NXT could really use an infusion of some new talent right now. But some of these guys are in limbo. They are stuck in limbo because apparently WWE may have been caught tampering. They may have been accused of contract tampering by Ring of Honor or Sinclair or whoever. With guys still under contract to ROH. I don't know if they got a legal letter. My understanding is they did, but I don't know. So they've backed off. WWE has backed off. They're doing everything by the book. They don't want to talk to anybody who's under contract. And unfortunately, some of the guys that they're interested in are just waiting. They're waiting for contracts to expire. I don't know if they have non-competes before WWE can even approach them. Let's start with Adam Cole. Adam Cole just dropped his ROH world title to Christopher Daniels. Then he was booted unceremoniously out of the Bullet Club, just like AJ Styles was before he debuted at the Royal Rumble. Adam Cole has been rumored to be WWE bound for months. I think he's coming in. I've made that clear before. I think that was one of the predictions I made on the prediction show. I think Adam Cole is coming in, not before May, because I guess that's when his contract is up, May 1st. But I think he's a lock for NXT, and I think he'll do very well. I think that's a guy who will go very far once he makes the main roster. Kyle O'Reilly is an example of someone who may be caught in limbo right now. He has not appeared for Ring of Honor in many, many weeks. He is basically gone from Ring of Honor. The belief is that he may end up in NXT. And I think I've said this before, that Kyle O'Reilly, great wrestler, I think on his own, him coming to NXT, it just has Roderick Strong written all over him. A very talented guy who I'm not sure has the personality on his own to really go anywhere there. You know, he can go to almost any other promotion, any indie promotion, and just knock it out of the park. But if his Red Dragon partner, Bobby Fish, were to come in with him, and you could debut those two as a tag team, that changes the whole dynamic. Bobby Fish's deal with Ring of Honor is over at the end of this month. It expires in about 2 weeks, I think. Actually, what am I talking about? I think Bobby Fish, I think I saw the 27th, so that would be a week. So his deal's up in about a week. The idea of Red Dragon coming in to feud, let's say, with Gargano and Ciampa, that works for me. Say okay with me. And also, they need more tag teams down there. We need more tag teams. And that's a program that I think that Full Sail crowd would appreciate. Donovan Dijak. He's already left Ring of Honor. He's gone. He's doing indie dates. He's working with Evolve. Evolve, of course, has a working relationship with WWE. Doesn't necessarily mean anything. I mean, Matt Riddle is with Evolve, and Matt Riddle isn't in WWE, and why Matt Riddle is not in NXT, I have no freaking clue. I know apparently he's a big pothead, but you know what? When you have a guy that talented, you can not make an exception, but you can work with them and kind of work that out, I think. What I've seen of Matt Riddle, and I've seen this guy live, and I've seen some matches on YouTube, he's tremendous. He really is, and I'm really, for all the talent he has, I am quite stunned that WWE has not already made a play for him, because they could really use somebody like him. So just because somebody's in Evolve doesn't mean that they're automatically, you know, being fast-tracked to WWE, but they do have that working relationship. And Dijak is a super athletic big guy. He's gotta be, I mean, every bit of, I don't know, 6'5", 6'6", something like that. WWE would be nuts not to have any interest and take a look at this guy. And then you have Dalton Castle. I talked a lot on this podcast last year about the Dalton Castle Silas Young feud. I was a big fan of it back when I had more time to watch ROH week to week. I think Dalton Castle is quite great. His deal is believed to be up in the next few months, so he's not going anywhere just yet. That's really all we know. He may very well stay put. It's possible that, you know, ROH locks him into a contract the way they locked Jay Lethal into a contract. And they would be very, very smart to do that. I think WWE would be nuts not to have any interest in Dijak, right? I just said that. Well, likewise, Ring of Honor would be crazy not to keep Dalton Castle and make him their next champion. Dalton Castle should be the next Ring of Honor world champion. And I don't know if it'll be enough to keep him, but they need to go all out and do what needs to be done to keep this guy. Because they can ill afford to lose too many more top guys. They've been hemorrhaging a lot of people over the last several months. And I think this is a story that's kind of fallen under the radar a little bit. Because I guess, you know, Ring of Honor tends to fall under the radar a little bit. But you pay attention to that, because there's been a lot of turnover in this company over the last 6 or 8 months. And I have no doubt that a guy like Dalton Castle, I can't speak for the main roster, but I have no doubt in my mind that he would do very well for himself and be very, very popular in NXT. So all of that, not to mention the Hardys, of course. The Hardys are I'm convinced, they're WWE bound. Even Joe Koff of Ring of Honor made the comment recently. He admitted that, you know, the Hardys are only in under a short-term deal. Jeff Hardy did an interview with SEScoops.com, and he admitted the same thing. He goes, nope, it's only a short-term deal. We're going to make the most of it while we're there. This is not a long-term deal. Of course it's not a long-term deal, because they're coming into WWE. Come on. it's obvious. The timing, I mean, come on. This deal is just got to expire that weekend in Lakeland, I think it is. They're going to have the match with the Young Bucks. They're going to drop the belts. And then what happens after that? Who's to say? I'm not saying they're going to necessarily be on TV. I mean, I think they will, but I think it's pretty obvious where they're going to end up. So it's very, very possible that Ring of Honor is going to look like a very different promotion 6 months from now. And if you don't think any of this is a big deal, if you're not a fan of Ring of Honor, if you don't think any of this matters, just look at WWE's main roster right now. Look at Seth Rollins. Look at Samoa Joe. Look at Sami Zayn. Look at Kevin Owens. Look at Austin Aries. I know some of these guys also spend time in TNA. But these were Ring of Honor guys first. These were Ring of Honor guys long before they ever set foot in WWE. So it's very possible, I would say even likely, that those names I just mentioned, at least some of them, we are looking at the future of Raw and SmackDown. That's why this is important. All right, let's get to your mailbag questions. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster. Say it with me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We will start with Vinny from New Jersey. What do you think about John Cena inducting Kurt Angle into the Hall of Fame? Who would you have picked to do the induction? I think Cena's a great choice. Kurt was Cena's very first match on TV. Cena went on to become the biggest star in the entire company. I mean, there's no bigger current star other than maybe Brock Lesnar, who they could pick to do the induction. And believe me, Brock don't do inductions. He barely speaks on television. Can you picture Brock Lesnar writing a speech and inducting somebody into the Hall of Fame? maybe they could do a deal where Heyman does the actual induction and Brock just kind of stands there in a suit bouncing up and down. All right, that could work. Kurt originally said he wanted Steve Austin to do the induction, so I don't know if Austin just isn't going to be there that weekend, or if WWE vetoed the idea, that I don't know. But Kurt's also said that he wouldn't have a problem with Cena or Brock doing it, and Brock's not doing it, so they went with Cena. And Cena's a fine choice. What I'm more shocked about is that Jim Cornette is rumored to be inducting the Rock and Roll Express. Now, Cornette makes all the sense in the world, but the idea that WWE would reach out to Jim Cornette and that he would accept, That surprises me. But mum's the word right now. Nothing's confirmed. WWE has not confirmed or denied it. Cornette has not confirmed or denied it. But where there's smoke, there's fire. Imagine being Kevin Dunn, sitting in the truck, having to watch Jim Cornette walk out onto that stage after all the stuff that, Cornette has said about this guy. He did that one shoot with Sean Oliver. It's one of the funniest stories I've ever heard, where he's talking about being in the meeting when he was working in the creative meetings in WWE in the late 90s, and Kevin Dunn didn't like him, and Kevin Dunn was like, oh, Jim, I find you tiresome, and it's just, he does the impression of him and everything. I can't remember that story without just laughing hysterically. Kevin Dunn should get the Warrior Award for all the verbal abuse that he's taken from this guy. But you know what? I don't cry for him. I can't cry for somebody who pulled in over $4 million in income last year. That was more than the McMahons. I don't know how many of you saw that in the when they did the quarterly, the earnings call, the last earnings call, I think it was. And they had all the salary information and everything listed. He made more than Vince. He had to have cashed in some stock. I'm sure, like, there's no way his base salary is higher than Vince McMahon, so that probably includes stock and something and other things, but man, that's a lot of money. So if Cornette makes him cry again, he can wipe away the tears with some of those dollar bills. Robert from Tennessee, I'm loving Lucha Underground on Netflix. Yes, but it's a good, thank you for mentioning that. If you live in North America, and it's very important because a lot of you were very disappointed when you heard that Lucha Underground was on Netflix. If you live in Australia or you live in the UK, you went and you searched and you found nothing. And the reason for that is because it is not on Netflix outside of the US and Canada, I believe. And I have no idea when it's going to be on Netflix in those countries, so don't ask me because I don't know. But the first two seasons of Lucha Underground are now available on Netflix. Apparently, it is buried in there. You may have to search around to find it. Netflix isn't exactly doing a good job of promoting it. So what it will mean, is it going to mean that much? I don't know. But the idea of Lucha Underground being on Netflix is huge. That is a huge plus for them, and I hope that it brings them more viewers. Especially those first two seasons. I will admit, I don't find season three as strong as the first two, but I'm still enjoying the show, but those first two seasons, you want to start from the beginning. I mean, I read a list off of about four or five matches for you to go back and watch, but you really should just start from episode one and just watch straight through, because that way you get a sense of all the stories and the characters, and when you get to those matches, you actually have the backstory to them. That would be my recommendation. But yes, it is on Netflix for those who don't know. Anyway, he says, I've been binge-watching it since it went up, and I'm up to episode 8 already. The presentation of the vignettes and the wrestling is definitely different from anything I've seen in American-based wrestling, and I was wondering if this is on par for a Lucha show. Also, I'm a big fan of Jim Cornette, and I know he hates Lucha Underground. Do you think he hates it because he doesn't like the style, the presentation, or is he just being an angry old man telling the kids to get off his lawn? I remember him saying it's more like a TV show than a wrestling show, but with all of his complaints about the business, you would think he would be excited to see something different doing well. I'm no Lucha expert, but you do get a lot of Lucha influence on the show. Obviously, and a lot of the big names from the Mexican promotions. All of the sci-fi stuff, though, I think that comes more from the writers and Chris DeJoseph than anything you would see in Mexico. Like, I don't think Aerostar is a spaceman who flies through the friggin' cosmos when he's wrestling in, down in Guadalajara. But that's strictly a Lucha Underground thing. It's not for everyone. They've really gone way over the top with the sci-fi stuff as the seasons have gone on. But you're right, it's different. I still enjoy it. Cornette hates anything that he feels exposes the business. He hates the Young Bucks with a passion, right? I know he really hated it when the Young Bucks super kicked that little kid on his birthday and the kid sold for it. I'm sure if you showed him half the shit that Kota Ibushi does, his head would explode. I know he ripped on Kenny Omega for wrestling a blow-up doll in Japan, which Ibushi also did. I'm not a wrestler. I'm not in the business like he is or was. So maybe I just look at it differently. I find that stuff amusing. I think there's a place for it. It doesn't mean you have to watch it. It doesn't mean you have to like it. It doesn't mean you have to enjoy it, but there's a place for it, and people do like it. And that DDT promotion over in Japan, which does all that crazy shit, they've been around for a long, long time. They seem to be doing very well. I've watched some of those DDT videos. I watched the video of, and I still don't know what I was watching, but I've watched the classic video of Kota Ibushi wrestling in the forest, the rainforest, I guess. I don't know. People all around, like spectators watching, but they're literally in the woods somewhere. And they're just fighting. They're wrestling in the woods and they're doing all kinds of weird, wacky shit. And I was just sitting here watching it for the first time, transfixed. I couldn't turn away. I sat here for like 15, 20 minutes watching this. You know, there's a place for it. But I can see how somebody from his era would be bothered by it. There is an element of old man yells at cloud in there. That is definitely part of it. We have a bunch of WrestleMania-themed questions this week. Jake from New Jersey. What do you think of Baron Corbin and Dean Ambrose having a parking lot brawl at WrestleMania, like Roddy Piper and Goldust did at WrestleMania 12? Sure. Why not? Right? They have enough matches on the show as it is. Just change it up a little bit. That is an awfully big parking lot that they will have. They'll have plenty of room to fight outside of a big stadium like that. Charlie from Missouri, with WrestleMania just 2 weeks away, I thought I would ask a question related to the show. In your opinion, what is the best main event, meaning the last match on the show in WrestleMania history? And what is the worst main event in WrestleMania history? Best main event, you know, as a kid, Hogan against Warrior was just epic, right? Title for title, 68,000 people. I'd probably go with that one. I'd probably go with Hogan and Warrior. If people are a little bit older, I mean, I saw Hogan Andre too, but if you saw Hogan Andre when you were already like, I don't know, early teens and stuff, then that you might pick Hogan Andre because of the epic body slam and, you know, all the people that were there. For me, it would probably be Hogan Warrior. But Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker at WrestleMania 26 is not far behind. That's probably number two. That was a great match. Not as good as their match at 25, but still a great match. Worst WrestleMania main event. Some people got hot at me when I said this before, but only because they're in denial. John Cena and The Miz, WrestleMania 27. I don't want to hear Bret Hart against Yokozuna. I enjoyed Bret Hart and Yokozuna. Come at me. There you go. I'm doing the hand signal here. Come at me. Look, WrestleMania 9, people shit on that show all the time. It was not a great WrestleMania. I have a soft spot for WrestleMania 9. I don't know if it was just the setting. I don't know. I can't really explain it. I can't point to one really great match on that entire show. But I don't hate on WrestleMania 9 the way other people do. And I thought Bret Hart and Yokozuna had a decent match. I thought they had a good match. It was better than their match at WrestleMania 10. I really was not a fan of that match. But the worst, in terms of WrestleMania main events, I think the worst WrestleMania main event was John Cena and The Miz. And to the people who want to throw LT in my face, LT and Bam Bam, WrestleMania 11, I say this. At least LT was the main attraction on the show. They built that thing around him. He was in the main event. And Bigelow, for his part, did a hell of a job of making him look good. Because by the end of that match, that guy was gassed out. I thought they were going to put an oxygen mask on him when that match was. He was sucking so much wind. I'm surprised the entire building didn't collapse. He was sucking all the air into his own body. Miz and John Cena was not a WrestleMania main event. I'm sorry, it just wasn't. It was a match disguised as a WrestleMania main event that existed solely to promote the following year's main event. People miss this point. The Rock was the real attraction at WrestleMania 27. He was the LT for that year's WrestleMania, and he wasn't even in the match. People were waiting for him to come out and for him to get involved because they built it up for weeks on TV. Him and Cena, then him and Miz were kind of mixing it up on promos. You know, what people really wanted to see was a triple threat match. It wasn't about Cena and Miz. It was about Rock and Cena. And people were waiting for him to come out. Great video package for The Miz. I'll give him that. That was a hell of a video. His video was better than the match. But it was not a WrestleMania main event. Chris, from Burlington, North Carolina. I was chatting with some friends and we were thinking back to what we thought were the best episodes of Raw ever. When I say best, I don't just mean boring, a boring show that had one great match or one great segment. So, for instance, the CM Punk pipe bomb was awesome, but it closed an easily forgettable Raw. Which reminds me that you say that, actually, because what I remember is the year before that, there was a horrendous edition of Raw. It was back when Raw was, it was a rare 3-hour episode of Raw. So when Raw was 3 hours back then, it was like a special show. And I remember that show being complete garbage. And at the very end of the show, they did fan voting to see who was going to wrestle, I think, John Cena. They picked CM Punk. This was back when Punk was wearing the Lucha mask. And that was the night that they did the Nexus Invasion, which is one of the all-time great angles that they've ever done on Monday Night Raw. And I actually remember thinking, I wonder if they intentionally made that show shit so that that angle at the end would be more jarring and would have more, leave more of a lasting impact. But that's a great, that's another great example of a show with a great, great segment, but that was just absolute dog crap. So I don't know why, just you made me think of that. But anyway, Chris says, I'm talking about from start to finish, any Monday Night Raw you could think of. From the first segment to the end, that was truly great. One episode I think of is the September 22nd, 1997 episode. We saw Vince McMahon take his first stunner. Cactus Jack debuted in an awesome Falls Count Anywhere match against Triple H. Undertaker cut a good promo on Shawn Michaels. The main event, I believe, was Bret Hart against Goldust. What do you think are some of the best Raws from start to finish? I remember that September 22nd show well. That was at Madison Square Garden. I was not there, but I wish I was. Vince taking his first stunner was a big, big deal at the time. And you knew it was coming. They were doing it announcer by announcer. First, it was Jim Ross, who ate a stunner at the, it might have been Ground Zero. Then Jerry Lawler ate a stunner on Raw. And it was like, all right, Vince, you're up next. And Vince didn't take bumps back then. So that was a very big deal. I remember rewinding that tape so much. That freaking thing had tracking lines on it. The one that stands out to me, though, just to answer your question, the one that stands out to me, and I do remember this date. This was not me looking it up. I remember it off the top of my head. April 17th, 2000. 6 days before Backlash. Triple H's Bad Night, I believe, was the title of the show that they used in the script. So that script may have leaked once. There's some Raw scripts over the years that have leaked. I just remember that being... I don't remember where I even read that, but that was kind of the show title for that night, because every show gets a title. That was the show that opened with Triple H losing the championship to Chris Jericho. One of the hottest opens to a Raw show ever. And then the angle continued. It went to commercial after that, and it continued. Triple H was, he brought Earl Hebner back down to the ring. He wanted Earl to get his belt back. They gave him the belt back, and then Triple H fired Earl Hebner. He pedigreed him. And then about midway through the show, Linda McMahon came out and she announced that Stone Cold Steve Austin would be in the Rock's corner at Backlash. Austin had been out by this point for a few months. This was right after the neck surgery. So he wasn't quite ready to come back and wrestle yet, but they couldn't wait to rush this guy back. They would have had him back at WrestleMania if they could have. That's why they held off on Rock winning the championship, because Austin couldn't be at WrestleMania. So they did it at Backlash. And... I know I've mentioned this before. You have never heard a crowd this loud for an announcement in your life. Just the mere mention of Austin's name got a bigger pop than anyone on the main roster today. No glass shattering, no music. He wasn't there. He didn't come out. Just his name. And then Triple H and Shane and Stephanie come down and Linda slaps Stephanie and... Triple H went to pedigree Linda. Shane broke that up. You can't pedigree my mom. It was just chaos. Now they all start fighting. The Rock's music hits. The place goes nuts all over again. It's just, it was just a different time back then, man. I'm telling you, it was special. If you lived through that era, and you didn't even have to live through it. I mean, if you got the network, you can go back and just watch all of this week by week if you're a new fan or a young fan. There really was nothing like that in terms of those crowds and just how they were into everything. I'm talking like the year 2000. Forget the like early Attitude Era stuff from 98 and 99. I'm talking more like just 2000 and a lot of the stuff they were doing, even in spite of the fact that Austin wasn't really around. I mean, you go back and watch those events and how full of life and energy and piss and vinegar that all the fans are full of there. And it's like, man, what happened? What happened? Oh, how can we get some of that back? I'm not saying like I want to see Mae Young giving birth to a hand. I'm not trying to make it sound like everything was all just a bed of roses back then. But I'm talking more in terms of that life, that energy. Where did it go? What killed it? Well, we know what killed it. But I'll give you another one. There is another Raw. The Raw after WrestleMania 29. WrestleMania 29 was nothing special. But the night after was a hot show. I was there. It was a lot of fun. That was the highlight of Dolph Ziggler's career. He peaked that night. He didn't know it, but he peaked. His Money in the Bank cash-in against Alberto Del Rio for the World Championship. The Shield interrupted Undertaker? Yeah, it was Undertaker. Undertaker was in the ring doing a promo. This is when the Shield was still coming out of the crowd, and when you saw them, it was like, oh boy, they're going to beat up the legend. So they come down and they circle the ring, and Undertaker's all by himself, and then the explosion goes off. And out comes Kane and Daniel Bryan, who were doing the Team Hell No thing at the time. And just the sight of Daniel Bryan standing there sandwiched between Undertaker and Kane, it was something to see. That was the night the crowd absolutely shit all over Randy Orton and Sheamus, which made the whole thing worth it. Just all the chants, we did the wave. I know now a lot of the stuff is just kind of obnoxious, but it was actually kind of unique that night. That was kind of the night that started it, and it was a lot of fun for us. Big Show came out at the end of all that. He knocked out both guys. We all chanted, thank you, Big Show. And the birth of Fandangoing. It started that night at the Izod Center. So there's a lot of stuff that happened on that show. I don't know how it came across to everybody else on TV, but in the building, it was a hell of a lot of fun. Isaiah from Philadelphia. I noticed since WrestleMania 30, WWE has stopped numbering WrestleManias. Why is this? Supposedly, Vince McMahon thinks it makes WrestleMania sound old. So they started giving them themes instead of numbers. So, for example, WrestleMania 31 was WrestleMania Play Button, I guess. WrestleMania 32 was WrestleMania Star when they were in Dallas. And now this year, they're in Orlando, so if you look at the logo, it's WrestleMania Sun. I guess next year it'll be WrestleMania Vomit there on Bourbon Street. I don't know. Actually, looking at the card, this year's show looks to be WrestleMania Vomit. Somebody should tell Vince, you know, there's this little thing, he may not be aware of this, but there is this thing, this event, kind of falls under the radar every year. It's called the Super Bowl, which they still number. They use numbers for the Super Bowl. They're up to 50 of these things now. And I don't know of anybody who ever said, man, I'm not watching the Super Bowl this year because it's too old. So, yeah, it's stupid, but what are you going to do? They do a lot of stupid shit. Juan from Puerto Rico, I was watching WrestleMania 9 on the network, and I noticed that for some reason, Hogan had a black eye. They covered it on the show by saying that Ted DiBiase paid off some cops to beat him up the night before, but I wonder if you know what really happened. I know Bruce Pritchard just covered this on one of his podcasts. He and Conrad, they did a whole podcast about WrestleMania 9, which I love that whole period. So even, again, I just mentioned WrestleMania 9 gets a lot of flack. I enjoyed it for what it was. Not a great show, but not as bad as people make it out to be. And they just did a whole, like, 3-hour podcast talking nothing but WrestleMania 9. I encourage everybody to go listen to it if you're into that kind of stuff. A lot of really good details there. They borrow stuff from the Observer newsletter on what was going on at the time, and then Bruce kind of chimes in with what he remembers about it. And there's been a lot of rumors about Hogan's black eye. One of the ones people love to talk about is that the Macho Man punched him in the face, something over, you know, him thinking that he got Elizabeth to leave him. He blamed Hogan and Linda for it, and so he punched Hogan in the face. It's one of those urban legends. It's never been proven. It's just a myth. The story that Hogan told is the one that Bruce Pritchard says that Hogan told them, and they had no reason to doubt it. Now, look, maybe Hogan is still full of shit, and only he knows the truth about what really happened. But his story was always that he was in a jet ski accident right before the show. He was out on a jet ski, and I don't know, he may have been drinking, there may have been alcohol involved, but something happened, and I guess, like, the jet ski, like, it almost hit him in the face or hit him in the head. It could have killed him. It came from within inches of taking his life, but it hit him in the eye, and I don't know. But that was always Hogan's story. It was a jet ski accident, and I guess WWE had no reason to doubt him because that's the same story they told, that they were told by Hogan. So we go by what Hogan says. It was a jet ski accident. I know that's dangerous, going by what Hogan says, but we really don't have anything else to go on. Speaking of Hogan, Vang from Minnesota sent this in. I recently discovered your show and have become an instant fan. I'd like you to answer a question about 80s, 90s Hulk Hogan. A lot of fans say Hogan couldn't wrestle. If you look at his Japanese matches, he showed plenty of in-ring ability. His style in Japan against that of the U.S. was completely different. Do you think the Japanese version of Hogan would have gotten over with the U.S. fans during that time? Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, now, if you're asking me, would technical wrestler Hulk Hogan, if that's all he was doing, would he have gotten over as big in this country? Then no. But if Hulk Hogan was still out there doing his posing routine and doing all of his, you know, the coked up promos that those guys were doing back then, but he was, like, incorporating more wrestling holds into his matches, yeah, of course, he would have been over all the same. That, nothing would have changed. I mean, that's what made Hulk who he was. You can't take that stuff away, right? That's what made Hulk Hogan who he was. It was the posing. It was the promos. It was copious amounts of steroids. You put all of those things together, and Hulk Hogan is still a massive star if he's, you know, doing some more wrestling holds. I mean, that doesn't really change anything. It also doesn't make any new fans, I don't think. I think he still gets over exactly the way he did. But you take away the charisma, you take away all the stuff that made him who he was, you keep the drop toe holds and the axe bombers and everything else and all the shit that he was doing in Japan, then no, he would not have been the same level of star. I mean, look, he could have upped his game in the ring and the people would have loved it. But the thing about Hogan is, like, he knew exactly what he had to do and what he didn't have to do. He was smart enough to know that when he went to Japan, it's just a totally different fan base and a totally different culture over there. And he had to adjust. And in this country, he didn't have to do all of those things. He could pose, he could eye gouge, he could back rake, all the other heel moves he would do. And then, you know, make a big comeback and hulk up and hit the big boot and drop the big leg and pose and go home. And that's all he had to do. And that worked for him. And the funny thing is, well, I mean, it's not really funny, but people give Hogan a lot of shit about not working hard enough or playing it safe in the ring and only knowing like four or five moves. You know, meanwhile, look at how crippled up the guy is. His back, his knees, he's had 8 back surgeries, he's had hip replacement, knee replacement. Hogan didn't exactly wrestle a hard style, right? Now, maybe the rings were harder back then, I don't know, but you look at some of the stuff the guys do now, whether it's the strong style stuff in Japan or all the aerial shit that we see here now, like in WWE on TV. This guy's finisher was a leg drop. That was the biggest high-risk move he did. Actually, you know what? That's not true. I do remember seeing Hogan taking or giving superplexes from the top of the steel cage in matches with the Big Boss Man. So Hogan every now and then would bust out stuff like that. But yeah, no, I mean, one of the biggest moves he would take week to week was a friggin' leg drop. But just imagine, though, doing a leg drop night after night after night for all the days they were on the road back then. Hogan himself claims, hey, brother, I'm one of the few people that's worked a 450-day year, brother, because you got to keep in mind the time change between Japan and the U.S. Somehow Hulk Hogan, was that what it was? Was it the time? Or like he claimed like he once wrestled a 400-day year, and I think he tried to explain it by saying like something with the time zone changes or something. Like it was just a very Hogan-esque thing for him to say. But the point is, like, Hulk Hogan was. He was the John Cena back then. And so John Cena has an insane schedule where he'll fly literally from one end of the country to the other to make, you know, multiple shots, like do media shots in the morning in L.A. and then make sure he's in Columbus, Ohio or Newark, New Jersey for a show in the evening and then fly right back out to go do an award show. You know, like, Cena's schedule is insane. Well, so is Hogan's. Hogan worked that same schedule that all those guys did back then. That schedule back then was inhumane. And so imagine doing a leg drop night after night after night after night. The human body was not made to get slammed down over and over and over, night after night after night. So I'm not surprised that Hogan's fallen apart. I mean, he still keeps himself in great shape. He's got the big biceps and everything, but Hogan is he's a crippled old man. I mean, a lot of those guys are. And it's not really surprising to see why. David from Westland, Michigan. I've been watching Raw and SmackDown from 2002, and I watched an episode of Raw where Shawn Michaels announced that Triple H would be joining the NWO. Were there any plans for Triple H and the NWO? I think the story going around... Let me think about this. I think the story going around was that they were going to tease it like all the way to SummerSlam and then maybe do something with Triple H and Kevin Nash. But Nash came back, I think in July is when he came back and he tore his quad. Literally the night that Kevin Nash came back, he was out for months with like a torn tricep or something. And the night he came back is when he took that one fateful step and he tore his quad and he just crumpled into a heap. So once that happened, I mean, the NWO, you know, at that point, the NWO was basically a sad sack of shit. So Vince just said, I'm just going to kill the whole thing. I mean, this is ridiculous. But if we're being honest with each other, the NWO was a sad sack of shit pretty much from WrestleMania 18 on. I mean, Scott Hall lost to Stone Cold. Austin lost, Hogan lost to Rock. Then they kicked Hogan out of the group. That was the end. I mean, at that point, it was just Hall and Nash. I mean, that was it. You know, they should have just ended it there and made Hall and Nash a tag team. The whole reason the NWO worked the first time was because they were the invaders, right? They were the invaders from another promotion. All this was ever going to be was just a watered-down version of that. Now, had they come in during the actual invasion they tried in 2001, I think that might have worked. But this was going to have a short shelf life no matter what. And once Hogan left and Hall got fired and Nash got hurt, it's like Jesus Christ, like, what's left? Who's left? You know, X-Pac and Big Show? Oh, wow, I can't imagine why the NWO didn't work. Dan from Thornton, Colorado. Who, in your opinion, is the most versatile performer in wrestling history in terms of being able to convincingly play a serious heel, a comedy heel, a comedy face, a serious face, and shades of gray in between? Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle's the best ever. He could do it all. Behind him, I would say Chris Jericho. And I'll throw one more name at you. Here's one more name for you. One of the most versatile guys that WWE has ever had, and I don't think he gets enough credit for it, is Kane. They have had that guy play every role under the sun, and he did it well. He got over with it, right? Monster heel, monster babyface, comedy babyface with Daniel Bryan, sort of pseudo-serious slash comedy heel as corporate Kane. You know, it's funny. I found myself watching a lot of WWF stuff from the year 2000 lately. I just find myself going back to that year. Because I think that was their best year. I think if you were to ask me what is WWE's best year ever, it's 2000. Creatively, anyway. And now, mind you, my favorite incarnation of Kane was the original Monster Kane. I love that mask. I love that look. I just love it. Setting people on fire, right? It was great. But I was watching Kane from 2000 recently. Like, early 2000 when he came back with Paul Bearer. He was out for a while, then he came back. Oh, my God. That guy was built like a brick shithouse. He had to be in the best shape of his career during that period, and he looked like a total beast. People talk about beast mode. You got to take a look at Kane from the beginning of 2000. Whew. Now, there's a guy, like, if they put the belt on him back then, I don't think there would have been any debate. He would have carried that championship very well. He was very, very believable in that role, and he looked the part. Alex from Tijuana, Mexico has a buy or sell on title belts with or without nameplates. Without. Buy them without. I already know your damn name. Doesn't need to be bolted onto the belt. I know who you are. Now, the custom side plates that WWE does now, I don't have a problem with that. I actually think those are pretty cool. But nameplates, I think, are just dumb. This week in Sound Off History, we are, in fact, up to episode 487, which means that if we go all the way back in the vault to episode 87, brings us back to October 24th, 2009, I talked about Snoop Dogg hosting Monday Night Raw and Miz wrestling Marty Jannetty, who looked really old and really broken down on this show. This was not the same Marty Jannetty who came back in 05 and wrestled Kurt Angle and looked tremendous. This was a very different Marty Jannetty. This was only 4 years after that. Marty Jannetty has lived a very tough life. I also ranted on the circus. My parents' 30th anniversary, I bought them tickets to the circus, and I was blown away by how expensive a ticket to the circus is. So I was actually appalled, I have to be honest with you. So if you want to hear me rant about the Big Apple Circus, you can go back and listen to that. Episode 187 from October 25th, 2011 was my interview with the then Ring of Honor television champion and future world champion, Jay Lethal. 30-minute interview talking about his return to ROH. This was after he was let go from TNA. Talked about comparing TNA's treatment of the X Division to an episode of Seinfeld. That's a great little deal from that interview there. Talked about the Black Machismo character, his promo battles with Ric Flair and TNA. A lot of good stuff in that interview with Jay Lethal, so you can go back and check it out. Episode 287 from August 11th of 2013 has my quick review of Total Divas Episode 2. Hilarious tall tales as told by Hulk Hogan over the years. And a passionate rant about the murder of Bruiser Brody and Carlos Colon turning it into an angle. Not a fan of Carlos Colon. And finally, episode 387 from June 14th, 2015, paid tribute to the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, who passed away that week. My Mount Rushmore for the Intercontinental title, if you ever wanted to know that, that's on that show. And my review of a wrestling show I went to at Citi Field here in New York, the home of the New York Mets. And Scott Steiner's horrendous back tattoo that he unveiled on that show. You know what that too reminded me of? Because I took a picture of it. I put it online. That tattoo reminded me of the symbiote. Is it the symbiote or the symbiote? Symbiote. However you pronounce it. The fucking black shit from Spider-Man, okay? Spider-Man 3. The symbiote that takes over Eddie Brock's body. It turns him into Venom. That's what that back tattoo reminded me of. I thought the symbiote had gotten hold of Scott Steiner. That is one of the most horrendous tattoos I've ever seen. And by the way, Venom, while we're on the subject of Venom in Spider-Man 3, what a waste of a character in that movie. I was so disappointed when I finally went to go see that movie, just to see what they did and didn't do with that Venom character. It's like they tried to pack, Steve Austin uses this expression, and it's so true. They tried to fit 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag with that Spider-Man movie, and it just didn't work. It just didn't work. And actually, they just announced that Venom is getting his own movie next year. Next October, the Venom movie is coming out. So hopefully they'll get it right this time. And don't forget, you could stream or download past episodes of The Sound Off on thesolemonster.com. You could also find most of them up on iTunes. And the first 10 episodes I ever did, they are available for listening on our YouTube channel. That's episodes 1 through 10. That's way back when, almost a decade now. We are coming up this fall on the 10-year anniversary of the podcast. So thank you, as always, for supporting the podcast and keeping us going for 10 years. Would not be here, still doing this, without your support. You can show your support via PayPal. You can go on thesolemonster.com, make a PayPal donation. You've got two new wrestling themed books that are out now. One's out now, one's coming out soon, but you can use our Audible link to get them. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Don't forget, the Ryback Reeves motivational book is out now. AJ Mendez, I guess her name is. Her book's coming out in a few weeks. You can cash in and pre-order it now using our link. And give us a like on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. That is the place to go if you want to support the podcast and be part of our little community on Facebook. We have our fan page. And so that's going to do it for this week, episode 487. I will be back next weekend with episode 488. Probably going to be doing NXT TakeOver predictions a week early, so we'll probably do that next weekend. Because they changed things up a little bit this year. Or did they do that last year? Maybe they did that last year, too, where they had TakeOver on the Saturday and the Hall of Fame on the Friday. But they're doing the TakeOver show the same night, the same day that we're going to be doing a podcast in studio. And so I don't want things to be completely outdated. So I said, let's just do the predictions a week before. So that's how you know we're getting close to WrestleMania weekend when I start breaking into predictions. So that'll be next week. And any fallout from the news this week, I'm sure there'll be some. We'll talk about that next week as well. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you as always, and we will see you right back here for 488 next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did you know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.